Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, so we're just waiting for our special guest today, Emerald Robinson of Lindell TV, formerly of Newsmax and One American News, and that'll be the number that I don't recognize. So I just got Brian Artis who checked in, which is going to be great. So I'm going to log him in here. Just type his name in. And so I have the guest list gets bigger and bigger every week. So I'm going to make everybody live. We got Judy Mikovits, we've got John Cullen, we've got Brian Artis, and we're just waiting for Emerald to call in. And again, that's going to be the number that I don't recognize, which is why I'm glad I keep such good records of everybody that calls in, even the people we don't want to talk to, like the stalker, which is kind of crazy. So just for the folks that don't know, let's give our quick statements of introduction, and then when Emerald calls in, we'll just go straight to her. Judy, you want to start? Our team captain, Judy Mikovits.
Sure. I'm Judy Mikovits. I guess it's easiest just to say plague of corruption and plandemic. Following the crimes against humanity of four decades of gain-of-function studies, starting with HIV of Tony Fauci, trying to expose the lies.
Sounds good. And Brian, let's get you in here, then we'll get to John, our presenter of the day.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Artis. You can find me at hashtag I love Judy Mikovits. That's my slogan. Love that lady. One thing to bring everybody up to speed on, I'm basically known as the Remdesivir guy, Meg Venom guy now. But I've been trying to expose all the corruption of the hospital protocols, all the lies of Anthony Fauci I've been aware of, that Judy Mikovits has known way longer than any of us. But to bring everybody up to speed, in Fresno State Capitol building, September 7th is a lawsuit being filed.
Brian, I got to hold you up just for a second. I think I've got Emerald Robinson on the line. I want to get to her right away. She only has half an hour, and we've got 2.5 hours after that.
Go ahead.
So let me just see if I can bring her up here. And if you hear unmute with a British accent, this would be Emerald Robinson.
Hi, this is she.
Oh, good. Welcome to Action Radio. Well, it's perfect timing.
Hi.
I'm glad it's – yeah. Thanks for having me on your show yesterday. But like I say, I want to get right to John. So John Cullen, if you'd like to introduce yourself, and Emerald, if you want to ask any question of him, he has a story to tell you. So we've got Judy Mikovits on the line. We've got Brian Artis on the line. Anybody else comes in, I might let you know. Oh, yeah, this is our world's greatest doctor panel. So first of all, come on back anytime. You don't need an invitation. Just join us.
I am
John,
honored.
Go ahead.
I mean, I had no idea that everyone was going to be on the line.
Oh, yeah. That's what we do here. We are full of surprises for you. I can't wait to start writing legislation with us. And this is when it's going to get really exciting. So that's going to be the fun part. But again, I don't want to take any time. John, introduce yourself, please. Begin. And Emerald, please feel free to ask him any question you want. John?
Okay, great.
Hello, Emerald. This is John Cullen. And I've been on this show with Greg now, I guess, for about 3 months, Greg. Is that right?
This is our 15th. Yep, 15th week.
Right. So although I don't have a background in the medical profession or in biology like Dr. Mikovits does, I was at Oracle 34 years ago and built the system, the mapping system, that's used to map the pandemic by Johns Hopkins and the WHO.
I see. So it's maybe not a medical doctor, but still extremely relevant.
Oh, right. We bring people together of all kinds of different expertise levels. So you're our expert journalist, reporter, investigator, and all that kind of stuff. So everybody has something. But you don't have to be an expert to talk about different subjects. Like I write legislation, but I'm not a lawyer. I don't have a broadcast degree, yet I've created Action Radio. So it doesn't matter, you know, all these different things. But just the collection, you'll see how this works. The collection of people together is unbelievable. Anyway, I'm sorry. Talk show host problem.
Well,
back to you, John.
I would just interject and say it's definitely much better to have people like you all writing legislation and regular Americans than lobbyists, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Which really different lawmakers and the special interest in D.C. The staffers and the congressmen have no idea what's in it for the most part.
Well, they're incapable of writing the bills. That's why we do it. You know, very simple, very straightforward, one page. You know, intro, old law, new law. It's a pretty cool formula we've worked out here. Anyway, let's see. I want to get to the story. John, tell your story. Go ahead.
So Emerald, I got involved investigating the COVID pandemic narrative and trying to figure out what exactly is going on here early on. And in March of 2020, I realized that Johns Hopkins was using the software that my team had put together 30-something years ago when I was at Oracle. And when I took a look at the map that Johns Hopkins was publishing, something was very wrong. It was like a major, major problem. And it jumped out at me within 60 seconds. I was like, well, what is this? What are they doing here? Now, this was March of 2020. The WHO had just declared a global pandemic, and there weren't four people dead in Beijing. There weren't 10. Let's use the number 10. There weren't 10 dead in Beijing. There weren't 10 dead in Shanghai. And there weren't 10 dead in Hong Kong. The only city in China that had more than 25 people dead was Wuhan. And none of the other cities had 10 dead. And I started looking around Southeast Asia at the countries that were bordering China. I said, all right, well, if there's this massive outbreak in China, something should be happening in Mongolia. Something should be happening in Vietnam, in Laos, in Burma. And yet there was no one dead in Vietnam. There was no one dead in Thailand, but the map had them color-coded as red. And as the guy who put the mapping system together, I'm scratching my head and go, well, why are they red? What do you have to do to earn a yellow or a green around here if no one is dead? And who is behind publishing a map that shows this global pandemic of panic and everything is red? Why would you do that? And why would Tedros declare a global pandemic if there's not 10 people dead in Beijing or Shanghai or Hong Kong? So that got me interested, and I started to investigate. And what I wanted to do was do some baselining. That's what we do in my industry. So when we're doing root cause analysis, one of the things we do is baseline. And if the data is available from prior years, that can be really helpful. So I started to look at other respiratory infections and viruses. I was looking at tuberculosis. I was looking at pneumonia. I was looking at influenza. I was looking at all kinds of bacterial and viral infections that people would die from to understand, well, you know, how many people die from these things? How many people die from tuberculosis? How many people die? In fact, I was looking at things like norovirus, the stomach thing that you get on cruise ships that's nasty. And trying to understand, well, how many people die of that each year? And as I started to get a better understanding, I started to look at the systems from the CDC. I was looking at WONDER, which is the system they use to keep track of deaths. And then they have another system that they use to keep track of influenza and influenza deaths. And this is a CDC system, so it's official stuff. And then they track death certificates. And they've been tracking influenza since right after the 2009 pandemic. So when we had the 2009 swine flu pandemic, pretty much immediately after that, they started to track what they call PNI, pneumonia and influenza. I don't know if you're familiar with that term or not, but they kind of lump influenza and pneumonia together and have been doing this since 2009. They call that PNI. Pneumonia and influenza, because influenza creates an environment in which pneumonia thrives and then kills people. And what we've been hearing from the government for years now is 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people died this season from influenza. And I started to research that. And what I found was chilling. It turns out that the CDC came up with this thing that Dr. Judy remembers from back in like 2010 or 2011. They came up with this very complex formula called influenza burden. An influenza burden is some sort of factor that takes into consideration deaths and hospitalizations and where people died and all this other stuff. That's just absolute obfuscation. I want to know how many people died of influenza, not where they died and how many times you had to change the hospital sheets. That, you know, that doesn't matter to me. So they come up with influenza burden. That's what they're telling you, 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 died this year. The actual numbers are more like 150,000 people, 180,000 people are dying from influenza yearly. And what I saw was that in January, February, and March of 2020, before COVID arrived, 4,000 people a week were dying of influenza PNI. And this was historic. This hasn't happened before. The United States never had three straight months where 4,000 people a week were dying from influenza. And I'm looking at the data, right? I'm looking at the historical data going back to 2013. And I'm dumbfounded by this. How am I the only one noticing this? Since January 1st of 2020, 4,000 plus people have been dying every week of influenza. And I'm noticing this in late March. And wondering why, well, wait, if there's 4,000 people a week dying from influenza, and now we're up to 50 people have died from COVID, I get it that COVID is important and scary, kind of like monkeypox now, but if there's 4,000 a week dying from influenza, why are we ignoring that? And that seemed odd. Why would Dr. Fauci simply not tell people there's two viruses out there? There's a big influenza thing and there's this COVID thing. Go get tested. Let's figure out what you need. We've got medicine for influenza and we have nothing for COVID. That's where the whole, you know, Pierre Corey, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine movement kind of came from, was that there was no therapeutic treatment for COVID. But there are therapeutic treatments for influenza. There's Tamiflu, there's Zofluza. So why wouldn't we tell people about that? Well, Dr. Fauci, later in the year, goes on Bret Baier and tells Bret Baier that, yeah, influenza is kind of like gone, kind of remarkable, remarkably low. And yet, the CDC tells us today that influenza was the number one comorbidity of COVID with almost 500,000 of the deaths list influenza as cause of death on the death certificate in addition to COVID. So it appears that we had two pandemics, a pandemic of influenza and COVID. But the part that gets really creepy is when you start to investigate the symptoms of these two different viruses. And you start to understand that possibly the influenza virus that's been going around was not seasonal influenza, but rather a pandemic strain. A pandemic strain that causes cytokine storms and blue lips and lungs to turn to jelly. The strain of influenza that does that is the Spanish flu. And Dr. Fauci resurrected it from people they dug up in Alaska in 2005. They resurrected it in 2005. They dug them out of the permafrost in 1999. But by 2005, they published the genome of the Spanish flu. Ray Kurzweil from Google, he's a senior fellow at Google now, he invented the Braille reading machine. And Bill Joy, the founder of Sun, wrote an op-ed to the New York Times called Recipe for Destruction. And so the Dr. Fauci and Dr. Francis Collins were both out of their minds. You don't resurrect the deadliest virus on Earth. They did it anyway. Symptoms, cytokine storms, blue lips, looks like oxygen. They called it the blue death. And if you listen to the testimony from Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel, who made a video in, I think it was February or March of 2020, he's describing the Spanish flu. That's what he's seeing. You can't hide that pandemic without another pandemic that came from China that has the exact same symptoms.
Can I ask you a question right now? So with the release of the Spanish flu, they said it's interesting you say this, because I do remember back where I'm from, back home, my mother had told me that fall that there was an extremely bad flu strain going around. And
yes,
then we
it was
talked
devastating.
About it again. She said,
we have
sick.
The data. Yeah, we have
did
the data. We have the deaths.
Or was this an accidental thing and then you had to cover it up with COVID?
Well, that's where you start getting into suppositions and stuff. So it for
okay.
me, because I'm a little bit on the spectrum, I have like Asperger's. So it's very important for me to distinguish between the data that's from the CDC and then what I think may have happened. Okay, so the data that we see and from the WHO tells us that there was an incredibly bad outbreak of influenza in the summer of 2019 in Australia. Now, CSIRO, C-S-I-R-O, in Australia, is like their Walter Reed. So this is where they keep the only BSL-4 influenza pathogen on Earth. So Ebola is BSL-4, Marburg virus is BSL-4, and reconstructed H1N1, 1918 Spanish flu, is BSL-4. And they have it at CSIRO in Australia. Well, 2019 in the summer, Australia has the worst influenza outbreak since 1918. And then the Australian military and the New Zealand military go to Wuhan to compete in the Wuhan Games in October of 2019. And the influenza virus that's been spreading around the southern hemisphere in the summer of 2019 is carried to Wuhan. And the Wuhan Games are bigger than the Olympics. There were 100,000 people at the opening ceremony, 10,000 competitors from all over the world, wrestling with each other, sweating all over each other, and taking this virus global. That was October of 2019. By January of 2020, 4,000 people a week are dying in the United States of influenza. And it doesn't stop. The entire year, all of 2020, 4,000 or more people die every week from influenza, regardless of what's happening with COVID. COVID goes up, COVID goes down. But I'm tracking the influenza deaths simultaneously. And the influenza deaths never dip below 4,000. Right now, as we sit here today.
I want you to jump in because you got about 10 minutes left. I want to make sure we get the whole story in. So anything you want to present, unless we can get Emerald back sometime, but I just want to make sure we get this all in one podcast for her to listen to and go over.
So that's kind of it, Emerald. I mean,
okay.
The net of this is there's been two pandemics. Whether or not the H1N1 was an accidental release or something more sinister is kind of hard to say. But the release of the SARS-CoV-2 in Wuhan appears to be sort of a national security type play, meaning if the story that I'm sharing with you got out that the virus that actually just killed 6.5 million people came from Walter Reed, where Dr. Mikovits used to work, right? So this is U.S. AMRID type stuff. U.S. AMRID has been working on this virus since 2005. if the story got out that 6.5 million people died from our thing that Ray Kurzweil tried to warn against, that would be quite a national embarrassment. So it makes a whole lot more sense for the company to blame it on China and blame it on Wuhan, throw some guy named Peter Daszak, who's not an American, throw him under the bus. He'll be the Christopher Steele for this go-around. He'll be the sacrificial lamb. We'll be Peter Daszak. And as long as everybody's talking about Wuhan and bats, Fauci's thrilled because nobody's talking about Jeffrey Taubenberger and Walter Reed and Terrence Tumpy. These are the guys who resurrected the 1918 Spanish flu.
Just one more component. The PCR test doesn't test for Spanish flu. Can we just include that? Then let's get to
that. That's the modus operandi. Yes, right. That's the modus operandi. So, Emerald, I do podcasts and have a channel on YouTube, and I had Dr. Cyril Wecht on the show, and he's the coroner for Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy Sr., for John Benet Ramsey, et cetera. I had Dr. Roger Schwelt. I had Dr. Scott Jensen from Minnesota on the show. He'll probably be the next governor of Minnesota. And what they're all kind of dumbfounded. It's like, oh, how did we miss this? How did all the physicians not pick this up? And the answer is kind of diabolical. We moved away from cultures and started doing PCR testing exclusively. And the way the PCR test works, it looks for a specific strain of something, meaning you have to tell it to look for H5N7 influenza, and it won't detect H3N5 if it's looking for H7N5. And the same is true with the BSL4 strain. If the BSL4 strain has not been provided to BioFire or ePlex, the people that make these PCR tests, you're not going to find it. Just like if you do a PCR test and you have tuberculosis, it doesn't tell you that because tuberculosis isn't in the test. Well, neither is the BSL4 strain of influenza, and that's how all the doctors got fooled. It's not in there. So it's never going to come back as positive for that strain, and that's how they pulled this thing off. But again, it's more like a national security story, meaning the government couldn't have it get out that this was our concoction that just did this. Better blame. And this is why Joe Biden doesn't want to press the issue with Xi. China right now, today, according to the WHO, doesn't have 25,000 people dead, according to the WHO, meaning they have fewer dead in China than Ohio. And that's not news. Anderson Cooper doesn't find that interesting. China has fewer than Ohio, according to the WHO, who declared the pandemic. And according to Johns Hopkins, there's not 10 dead in Beijing. There's not 700 dead in Shanghai, according to Johns Hopkins.
Emerald, let's see if we got some questions in here, because I know you got a short time.
I find this extremely interesting. Now, I have not heard anything, you know, related to the Spanish flu, but I do feel like, yes, this is a national security issue, and everything that I research does always point back to the United States, right? And you never take China for the curve, but they did keep pointing to those military games and suggesting it was the United States military. But I think we also were thinking about them just shifting blame, right? Because, of course, we would automatically go there, and then we kind of, I think, misinterpreted what they were saying. So that part, you know, let me ask you, with the flu, there's still some very people who supposedly have COVID, like it's hitting my home area where I'm from again really bad. Like my grandmother's in the hospital with it. COVID, quote unquote, COVID. Could you do a test of these people if they actually did the accurate culture test and think you would still find, Spanish flu cultures?
Somebody like Dr. Judy. So the answer is yes, but you would need somebody like Dr. Judy who knows what they're looking for. In other words, the H1N1 Spanish flu iteration differs from the 2009. It's called PDM09 is the strain from 2009. And they're different, but it takes somebody like Dr. Judy who really knows what they're looking at to be able to say this is Taubenberger's strain. This is the one. But yes, it can be done if a culture was done correct. Yes.
Judy, you want to jump in here?
It's absolutely. It's simple to do those things. And so what I was showing as soon as John told me that, I believe it was September 25th of 2020 on the Jason Goodman show, all I did was look up a paper as he was talking from the Journal of Virology, November 2004, and it's called Novel Origin of 1918 Pandemic Influenza Virus Nucleoprotein Gene. So all they did was take the pieces and see what was the specific little peptide or codons, the base pairs that we had to change that make that so deadly. So they found out what made it so deadly, and they put it in vaccines. So there was a military paper written by Greg Wolf that was published January of 2020, and it said, influenza vaccination and respiratory virus interference among Department of Defense personnel during the 2017-18 influenza season. And what that shows, and you remember 2017 and 18, people were dying, and people were
80,
dying from the vaccine. Yeah, and
80,
from the vaccine.
Died.
And this is in our book, Plague of Corruption, about the vaccine court and Timothy Cunningham, who worked at the CDC, a PhD, who said, wait a minute, this is killing people, and it was the vaccine. So was it in the vaccine strain that they cloned the virus in 2004? We called it the 2017 flu-nami. And the authors on this paper, as John just said, came straight from Armed Forces Institute there in Rockville, Maryland, not too far from Fort Detrick. So that
and the tragedy,
paper said.
Well, I want to make sure that Emerald understands the tragedy here. So you said that a member of your family is sick in the hospital. What everybody seems to be overlooking, Emerald, is it's absolutely not just possible, but probable. In fact, 10 times more people have died with COVID and influenza than just COVID on their death certificate. And I need to repeat that. Only 5% of the total deaths, so we have a little over a million people that are reported to have died with COVID, but only 5% of those people have just COVID on the death certificate. 500,000 people have COVID and influenza on the death certificate. The tragedy here, Emerald, is that this H1N1, even the Spanish flu strain, can be treated with Xofluza from Shionogi in Japan. Shionogi in Japan makes a product called Xofluza, and the amazing thing about it is it's just one dose. Based on your body weight, it's either one tablet or two tablets, and that's it. And Timothy Cunningham, go ahead.
I just have a quick question on, so with, say, this influenza strain that is part of the Spanish flu, does ivermectin treat that?
So it's interesting. So that's where I'm eager to connect with Dr. Corey and Dr. Marek and some of these others, because I think they accidentally came up with a treatment for H1N1 and they don't even know it. They think they're treating SARS-CoV-2.
That's hydroxychloroquine,
PCR test,
right?
Doesn't...
Hydroxychloroquine, right. Dr. Zelenko?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of the above. So it turns out that they accidentally come up with a treatment for this H1N1 without knowing that that's what they were faced with.
And it doesn't matter, and this is what my whole body of life's work is, because it's not the virus. It's the cytokine storm that John mentioned.
Right.
It's what's wrong with the cell. It's turning on the flame. So in the case of
not
the
everybody
influenza,
died. Right? Not everybody. Not everybody who contracts the Spanish flu is going to die.
Hold on, John.
Exactly.
So what Dr. Judy is pointing out is that these treatments, the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, might be enough to make the difference between whether you live or die. It can be the tipping point. Potentially. And well, but nobody's studying it. Go ahead.
They were. Absolutely they are. And we've been studying it for 3 decades, maybe even 4. This is, you know, HIV. This is autism associated with the XMRVs, the virus families that give you that cytokine storm. We knew this. We knew you don't give those patients influenza vaccines because the flame goes too high. So there are lots of treatments, peptide T, things that block the interactions of the cells. This is my whole life work. You don't identify the virus. So in all of these itis diseases, the people most susceptible, you don't give someone with COPD. Every single year I gave my husband hydroxychloroquine with COPD. You don't give them live viral vaccines. You don't Right. give somebody with HIV live viral vaccines. Never did. The paper, the data are all there. This is premeditated murder, and they knew it. We know these treatments, and, you know, Pierre Corian, I'm sorry, the medical mafia there who told you it was horse paste for 20 years didn't know what we did in the natural products, because people like, I mean, they published the paper. Fauci's paid laboratories published the paper in 2005 when they cloned SARS-CoV-2 in 2004. They published that paper at the same time in Journal of Virology, first author Michael Moore. They were putting together these viruses, culturing them in the same line. And as John said at the beginning, PNI, pneumonia and influenza, when you lump everything together, it's what Ralph Barrett called no-see-em. So you throw in another little clone and see if you can throw the flame so high you burn out the lungs of the infected. So nobody who's been injected, this is where McCollum, only the most vulnerable should get it. No, you don't understand biochemistry, and you're murdering people. You didn't come up with the cure. You stopped people from being cured, and now you're out there saying, oh, yeah, and let's charge $10 a pill when it costs 50 cents, and we could have saved millions. We published on Serum in 2015, double-blind placebo-controlled study. Kids got their life back with autism associated with these inflammatory cytokine storms, with infections that came from their injections, and they knew it.
Dr. Mikovits, I just want to follow up on that, and I just want to clarify what you're saying. So for an immunocompromised person who they were, you know, saying they were pushing it for at first, but then, you know, blanketly, the mRNA viruses, mRNA vaccines, or really any of them, would have been detrimental because it's the spike protein is active, right, in the mRNA. So it would have caused the inflammation and right, and the over response from a person like that. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. You killed people. You can't give somebody with heart disease something that causes myocarditis. And they knew this. We've done these experiments. This was my whole career. This was the NIH. We made those drugs for the last 40 years. We put these combinations. They denied myalgic encephalomyelitis and multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, PTSD, OCD, the same inflammatory cytokine storms. And they denied people treatments, calling them crazy for 3 decades. Oh, and it's just your bad behavior in HIV/AIDS. You never injected somebody with HIV with any live viral vaccine. We never, you know, and this year they deliberately killed the most vulnerable in the society, knowing it. This is where these doctors, let's just give it to the elderly. Are they being paid to kill them off like everybody else was?
No, I find this very interesting because, you know, I've had this conversation with family members, so this is more personal than journalists as well, you know, who are upset that they maybe didn't get it. But, like, for one person, they have severe rheumatoid arthritis and have been on Humira for 20 years.
Ask the physician about Xofluza prophylactically, because, again, I'm not a doctor, but my understanding from reading the materials is that Xofluza can be given if they believe the person may have influenza virus. And most of the people with COVID who get sick and are older who do pass away are passing away with pneumonia. And again, 10
right.
times more people are dying with COVID and influenza than are dying with just COVID on the death certificate. 10 times more.
So let me ask you, when you're talking about the Spanish flu strain that seemed, that you say was prevalent at the beginning, is that still...
That's a supposition. So that's a supposition. So the supposition that I'm
right.
making, so here's sort of my assumption. My assumption is it's this resurrected H1N1 strain, because that's the only good explanation I can think of that Dr. Fauci and Dr. Walensky wouldn't want to talk about it. Why would you not tell everybody there's 4,000 people dying a week from something? Why would you keep that a secret unless it was our strain, unless we made it? And you wanted to blame it on China.
So where are we now with the people in the hospital currently on this?
Well,
is it still mostly...
Right, so here's the mic drop. Here's the mic drop moment. You ready for this? I hope you're sitting down. Since week number 9 this year, and we're in week number 34 right now. So we're in week number 34. Since week number 9, more people have died every week from influenza than from COVID. In the USA. And it's right there on the CDC's website. It plain as day, since week number 9, which was March 1st. So March, April, May, June, July, and August. More people, every week, without exception, more people have died in the USA from influenza than COVID. And nobody knows except for our audience here.
Emerald.
So my next question is always like, you know, actionable. So you talked about Xofluza. How do people get it?
You just ask your doctor and you share with your doctor the comorbidity data about COVID. And you say, doc, half the people that died with COVID had influenza. Xofluza appears to be the most effective treatment for influenza right now, more so than Tamiflu, which is oseltamivir. When I spoke to Dr. Scott Jensen, he said a lot of doctors now are kind of moving away from Tamiflu, oseltamivir, and the Xofluza appears to be the hot new thing. Timothy Cunningham, who was found drowned in the Chattahoochee, used to work at the CDC, said that he thought that Xofluza was so effective that we might not need vaccines for influenza anymore. In other words, it's like, you know, Zithromax. It's like you just take it for a day and it's done. You're cured. It's done. It's over. So what do you need the vaccine for? And he died tragically. So I would just ask the doctor and say, can we get a course of Xofluza just in case, since 500,000 of the million deaths had both? Why would you not treat both? And that's the tragedy here, is that Dr. Fauci didn't speak up. Dr. Walensky didn't speak up. Nobody's looking at the data. And half of the deaths had influenza, and they could have been given Xofluza or Tamiflu, and maybe you wouldn't have died. So that's the tragedy.
And you see, Emerald, these that you ask where these viruses go, are they still around? Yeah, they're in every single flu shot, every single year, every single polio shot, every single year. In 2011, they published a paper saying metagenomic analysis in viruses from bat fecal samples. Oh, from China. This is Zheng Jingxi. You know, this is what they don't want you to know. They submitted this paper October of 2011. They have all kinds of retroviruses. They have rat adeno-associated virus, feline, which is cat, pan-leukopenia virus, canine parvovirus, bat coronavirus, H1N1 coronavirus, is an aphid lethal virus. Let's see, mouse viruses. They have an infectious molecular clone, a synthetic virus of XMRV, right out of the labs of Fort Detrick, Cleveland Clinic. It's all in the cell lines. So every time they grow an influenza vaccine, in for another season. They're recombining all of these viruses that are in there and you know, spin the wheel and see what you die of next year as they become more and more lethal. And this is what they've done, and Tony Fauci's done, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He promised then-president during the election, he was on 60 Minutes in 2016 after Hillary fell down out in October in New York. She falls down and her press secretary comes up the next day and says, oh, she's fully vaccinated. And I said, of course, she's out there with Parkinsonian shakes. Of course, she's fully vaccinated. And then the next Sunday, Fauci comes on 60 Minutes and promises a flu outbreak. Oh, and then Sunday before the election. And everybody remembers that. And look at these papers, 2011. They've been weaponizing these every year. And that paper came out from the military as they injected the military in 2020 in January. They knew, okay, you're 36% more likely to be diagnosed, almost four times more likely to be diagnosed with COVID if you got a flu shot in 17 and 18. Oh, right when they predicted it. They put it in the shot in the Maiden Darby kidney cell line, and that's the one that went to Italy and killed everybody. This is what people don't understand. Yeah, there are viruses. There are recombinant viruses. They've got them in mosquitoes. They promised you flying syringes. They're dropping them on Florida as we speak, not giving anybody as they drive these plandemics. And they have treatments all along, and they're driving the universal injections where all they have to do is change a codon or two. They can lie to you. Everybody thinks it's the mRNA vaccines. Every single flu vaccine is mRNA vaccines with dog, monkey, mRNA viruses. All the viruses I just read to you are sequences they inject in you, hundreds of them every year in our children, spreading them through families. We've watched this and tried to sound the alarm as the explosion in cancer. You don't give a cancer patient a live viral vaccine. By definition, they can't respond. This is what they're murdering people, and they know it.
Yeah. So also, Dr. Mikovic, with these vaccines, clearly, you know, they're murdering people. There's the question of population control, and that has always been an agenda for a certain group. There's also the tracking. Do you believe that there's also, you know, the AI component of this? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's no question of the AI component. In vaccine court, when we served as experts from 15 to 19, we also showed you a 2017 paper by Gatti, that is the first author, G-A-T-T-I. I submitted these in vaccine court, showing these same arguments for 5 years of who's getting injured. So, yes, you can see the metal. They did a scanning electron microscope, and then they used GCMS, mass spec, and different technologies to show you every metal. We can see those hydras. They're in every shot. They're in every single shot. The list, this paper, it's on our website. I believe Greg has it at all. I'm happy to email it to this team, and he can email it with you. It's stunning what's in that paper, and that vaccine court knew it, and they covered it up. They covered up the injuries. That's what I show in my talks. Oh, is it monkeypox, or was it vaccine injured of a infant day one of birth with from HBV? Is it AIDS, or is it DTaP in seventh grade? You never give a growing child anything, because especially with these XMRVs, you'll sterilize them. They knew this with the Gardasil shot. That's what Bobby Kennedy was fighting. We did a court case in L.A. because they lied about the saline controls in the Gardasil trials. This has been going on for four decades, and COVID is Fauci's premeditated murder of all of them. Get them all shot up with the kill shot. You'll cremate them all, call it COVID, and that's not at all why they were dying. And then he goes on his merry way, and then all you have to do is change a code on a year, and you can take out the blacks, and you can take out the Jews, and you can take out the genetically susceptible, because you just gave them all AIDS back.
Right. Well, I do have to jump off now, but this has been great. I'm really glad you had me join in on this, and I hope we can all You know, I hope you all can also come on my show to share this information with my viewers.
Oh, I'll get all the emails to your producer. She has mine and she has John's, and we'll just continue on. And come back anytime. Bring your questions. We're here, you know, Central Time, 10 until 1 every Thursday. And you don't need an invitation. Just drop in or just send me the questions. I can ask the panel. You can listen to the podcast. Whatever we can do to help.
Thanks for joining
Great.
Us.
I love
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Thanks, Emerald. Wow. That's what makes this special. And I was going to try and get Jim and Brian to ask a question if we could. But I really wanted to make sure that Judy and John especially had the chance to do that. I think she'll be back. At least I hope so. And she's the one that's the most interested in our vaccine product liability bill. She talked about it yesterday. I've got this WeTransfer huge file, and they don't have the podcast available just yet. But I'm going to try and get that out to folks, and you can take a look at this. But if you missed it yesterday, I was on for 6 minutes, talked about Action Radio. She actually had our website and the bill, the vaccine product liability bill, right there on display with the website on display. So the entire Lindell TV audience that listened to this, you know, saw that bill. And so what I'm hoping to do is to get Steve Bannon and Mike Lindell and some of the other hosts, Wayne Allen Root, interested in that bill and in writing legislation themselves. And we'll see what we can do, because the Lindell TV audience, that's all America firsters. Those are the people that are going to be the most active, you know, in the whole country in terms of, you know, freedom and patriotism and all the things that we're trying to fight for here. Anyway, we've got, anybody has a quick comment? In fact, Jim and Brian, let's get you guys in here real quick. Then I'm going to take a quick break, and then it's back to our regular meeting. But that was incredible. John and Judy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Brian, got a comment? You want to jump in here for a bit, and then I'll get Jim. Oh, he's Jim Thorpe. Why don't you go ahead? Unless you're busy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
That's just us. Hey, Jim.
Good to hear you, Greg and John. Great, some great communications here, John.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. What are your thoughts hearing all this stuff as I'm explaining it to Emerald? Was that cogent, or was that kind of hard to follow?
No, I think that it is extremely cogent. And I think to your point, and also her point, we don't do viral cultures anymore. They're an artifact of the past. And I believe the reason why we're not doing them is exactly supports your theory, John. We don't do them anymore because we can manipulate the data however we want, the PCR.
What's the timing, Jim? What was the timing? When did we stop doing cultures?
When we jailed me.
10 years ago? 10 years ago, they
stopped
doing cultures?
I was the last, 2011. 2011,
yeah.
When they shut that down, that's when they did it.
That's exactly
interesting.
Right. That's my timing. Because I would, with my extensive experience with fetal blood sampling and submitting my specimens of amniotic fluid, fetal blood, maternal blood for viral cultures, they were no longer available like after 2010. Everything was PCR. So,
Wow. This is fascinating. I didn't know this. And this is synchronous. This is synchronous with the development of influenza burden and hiding 150,000, 180,000 deaths a year. Fauci has I want Jim to understand this. And Brian, if you're listening, but you know, you got us on mute.
Yeah, he'll get the podcast, but
Fauci,
go ahead.
All right, Fauci's been sandbagging 150,000 deaths a year with this influenza burden reporting. They're telling people 16,000 died, 22,000 died, 31,000 died. And the real number is like 174,000. But they're not going to sell any influenza vaccines if they tell, you know, if the news is, well, you know, this season 180,000 people died of the flu despite being inoculated. That's not going to sell vaccines.
No,
so
the flu sells vaccines.
Burden,
the flu causes
well,
the vaccine.
Flu sells
the flu
vaccines
vaccine causes
they,
it. Yeah.
Correct.
People think only 16 are dying. Right. Yeah. But if
Correct.
You heard that
and
180,000 died, right, if you heard 180,000 people died this past season from the flu despite being inoculated, you might not be inclined to go get inoculated again. Right? You say, well, what the hell do I need the inoculation for if 200,000 people are dying from it anyway? So they suppress the number with influenza burden, and they suppress the cultures at the same time. That
and,
is so diabolical.
And to follow that
Judy,
along, if you knew the polio vaccine was causing the only cases of polio, acute flaccid paralysis, acute flaccid myelitis, you know, every year, 4,000, 10,000, clinically indistinguishable from the vaccine, you wouldn't give that one either. And to Jim's comment before, I literally used to ride my bike during the AIDS epidemic to pick up umbilical cord blood from Frederick Memorial Hospital so I could use duviral cultures of people with HIV, see how it would grow, see what strain, see what variants, all the co-infections, whether it be a herpes virus or pneumocystis pneumonia, and understand the cytokine storms. I did this every week for probably 20 years. And we did all the cultures, and we could see all the things that grow. The people didn't die of HIV. They died of pneumocystis pneumonia or TB. So we looked at the part of the immune system, and we treated accordingly. So this was planned, and they've been doing it all along. And they've been caught by the, if you will, anti-vax movement and people like me who are doing these cultures. So when they jailed me, we cultured the viruses. We cultured the strains that I named in that cave. So have they been injecting people since they created these viruses in 2004? And the answer is yes, they've been in every vaccine. And they've been watching who gets sick and where. And they got a disease burden of cancer, ALS, Parkinson's, ME/CFS, multiple sclerosis, the explosion in vaccine AIDS on that slide I show. And so now 2020 is, we better kill them, and because we got Trump to sign that universal flu vaccine in 2019, so we got it all set. So all we have to do is kill everybody now and call
we
it something
advance.
Else, and we've got. And then we don't have to pay the liability. You know why? In 2011, when we isolated seven variants and cultured them, we did not do PCR. Bob Silverman did PCR, and Bob Silverman's job was to monitor RNA decay. That's his expertise. How long does it take it to break down? How can we get the most stable mRNA? Oh, that in a dead person will keep producing so that you could track them, as she asked, from the grave months later. Oh, okay. I mean, and yet, I did the cultures, so in 11, when they realized the enormity, oh, my God, what was the last word I ever said in a public conference before I was fired, jailed, surrounded, my office was locked down, all those notebooks, the whole data, paper. We didn't have the Internet, so they thought they could get away with rewriting it, and they just didn't count on Frank Rossetti doesn't know how to throw anything away. That's the last chapter of Plague of Corruption. I got every one of those cell lines in a freezer. I can show you which one they manufacture, and I can sequence the virus. It's not that there are no viruses. It's everything since LAV has been a gain of function by Fauci in order to drive drugs. And now we're saying, oh, now that it's all gone, the CDC quietly puts ivermectin on their website. Oh, and our family members are dead, murdered. When they used it and they had God-given immunity and they were murdered, my husband, you know, this is these children, these abortions, this is ridiculous.
Greg? Yeah, I'm still here.
What do you think?
I'm just listening.
Well,
I want to,
when we,
go ahead.
You said you want to take a break, but when we come back from the break, Dr. Judy, I want to talk, you just talked a second ago about RNA and the stability of the RNA. And this was something that came up on the show last week. We have Brooke Jackson on the show, and we were talking about the temperature and the 70 degrees minus type stuff, and how Pfizer said, well, in order to maintain RNA stability, we have to keep it at negative 70. When we come back to the from the break, can you talk about what might happen if it wasn't kept at negative 70? In other words, well, what happens if RNA becomes unstable? Can we talk about that when we come back from the break?
Sure. I'm not going to take that long. Sure. I'm going to do a couple of short breaks. We've also got Sheila Hemp on the line, too. But I've got a blockbuster question, which I'll save. I'm just going to play a couple of things right now. Mute your line. So take a break, grab a cup of coffee, and we'll be right back in about 3-4 minutes. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Yeah, and I do mean the ADHD Radio Network. That was completely intentional. I have so much fun here. All right, let's start to make our folks live again. We've got Dr. Judy Mikovits. We've got John Cullen, our data expert. We've got Dr. Jim Thorpe, world's greatest baby doc. We've got Brian Artis is back, Dr. Brian Artis, and Sheila Hempel. I want to just one thing last, the first time you were on, I really, just a suggestion here, I really like to stick to a topic and kind of explore it fully. And I want to make sure that we don't deviate, you know, we can take any number of topics, but what I really want to do is not jump from topic to topic so quickly like we did last time so that we can fully explore the things that we have here. John asked a question. And he posed it to Judy. I want to get back to that. Then I got a real blockbuster for you that occurred to me just before the show. But again, Sheila, welcome back to Action Radio and our World's Greatest Doctors panel.
Welcome, Greg. And your observation of my first meeting is a occupational hazard of mine because I do cover a vast array. So I will certainly try to stay on task. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's no problem. Well, I'm glad you're here. Yeah, like I say, feel free to change topics. But like I say, I just want to make sure we do focus. I'm probably the worst on ADHD stuff. I've got like 15 things in my head right now. John, back trying to get to the plan. You had a question for Judy, and let's get back. Let's restate that, and then we can move on. Again, Jim and Brian and Sheila, feel free to hop into our conversation here. John?
Sure. Well, on last week's show, we had as our guest Brooke Jackson, and Brooke had shared with us her experience overseeing the clinical trials.
Right.
One of the things that she shared was that the product, the Pfizer product, was not kept at negative 70 centigrade the entire time. And Pfizer says, well, we have to do that back in the day, so back when this was the only version of the product available, we have to do that to maintain the stability of the RNA. And so the question then is, well, what if you don't do that and it's kept in a residential freezer instead, and then it's administered?
Yeah, 98.7 degrees or whatever our body temperature is.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it says it has to be stored at negative 70, there's got to be a reason. So what do they mean when they talk about RNA stability, and what would happen if RNA became unstable and we administered it anyway? It would matter, would it?
Well, John,
Judy?
Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
So there appears to be a dichotomous reporting of the degradation of RNA. It was in the pre-trials or in the clinical trials when it was being monitored, data was coming out that, you know, the product during the clinical trials was in the range of, quote, 80% intact RNA molecule. For the vaccine to be effective, it needs to be at least that, according to the experts. So what happened after they rolled it out, there was a massive increase in degradation of that large singular RNA molecule down to as low as 40%. In other words, only 40% of it was undegraded. To answer your specific question about what are the complications of that, it cannot be answered. There are no data.
But even the degradation, let's talk about that. So we start out with an RNA strand, right? And that RNA strand is supposed to be read by a ribosome, right? The ribosome is going to read this thing, and when it reads it, it's going to spit out a protein. That's my understanding. You guys stop me if I'm wrong.
That's
right? So
correct.
The ribosome is going to read the RNA. It's going to go, okay, I got it, and it spits out a protein. And the protein it's going to spit out is going to be protein antigen. Is that the idea?
Well, there's about 26 proteins, 27 proteins that are created on that ribosome by the codon sequences in the messenger RNA. So about 27 are transcribed. To my knowledge, the only very dangerous one is the spike protein. And if you look
right,
at
so,
the
but you're saying it's degraded. But if it's degraded 30-40%, what does the ribosome do at that point?
It makes a nonsense, what's called in genetics, a nonsense protein that could potentially have some serious implications as well.
That doesn't sound good, Jim. A nonsense protein? This is a real thing. A nonsense protein is a real thing. It doesn't sound good.
Correct.
Yes, it, you know, you have if you, there's several different types of RNA DNA mutations. You can lose a codon. You can have a frame shift in which, you know, your sequences are generally read, you know, with certain number of base sequences. So if you have an omission before conception in one of the germ cells, the sperm or the ovum, and you are missing one of those codons, that can cause a nonsense or a frame shift mutation in which every subsequent gene will have the wrong codon in it. Now, some of those will get transcribed as a ribosome, and some of them will not. If you only have a portion of that segment, it's possible that a protein will be produced which doesn't have a function and then may end up causing cellular debris, misfolding, and actually a prion, like agglutination of those proteins, if you will. That's what we think is going on with the spike protein. But to your point, John Cullen, there are no data. We have absolutely no idea whether the further degradation of those RNA strands is deleterious and poisonous, or is it beneficial? Nobody knows that.
I guess I'm going to say they do know that. And I'm going to say they've been experimenting on that for three decades. And I'm going to read you, that's what I just tried to say, John, Robert H. Silverman, who constructed.
So you're saying that
the
they're studying. All right, so I want to test my understanding. So you're saying that 20, 30 years ago, they were studying what happens if we put a partial strand of RNA and introduce that to
correct.
The ribosome, what happens? So they were looking at this years ago, you're saying, but kind of surreptitiously, something that Dr. Thorpe wouldn't have known about this, right?
Well, sure, because he doesn't read this kind of research. Here's the title of the paper.
Yeah.
Targeting RNA decay with 2', 5' oligoadenylate antisense. So you do a antisense RNA in respiratory syncytial virus-infected cells. So basically what they've been doing is, and this is, we have an endoribonuclease inside. We have a lot of them, but there's one called RNase-L. And what it does is it has antiviral activity, because when you clip up RNAs into little pieces, they turn on antiviral activity of type 1 interferons against picornavirus, vaccinovirus, reovirus, retrovirus, the RNase-L.
But that sounds good to me.
So we have endogenous. So 97% of our mRNA is regulatory. We have long-chain non-coding RNA. This is what Richie Shoemaker showed in chronic Lyme disease as a biomarker of people who are the most sick with the neuroborreliosis. So we have small inhibitory RNA. We have some called microRNA. There's one in particular, microRNA 155. We number these in the hundreds of thousands, and we use antisense, the opposite sense, in order to silence expression of cancer and other things. Small inhibitor. We've used these in cancer research. I developed this for my this was the lab of antiviral drug mechanisms. So Bob Silverman, who was on our paper, who made the infectious molecular clone of XMRV in 2005, just keep saying this to yourself, 2004, the flunami strain of influenza, the pandemic we talked about earlier, 2004, the SARS-CoV-2, which is not a coronavirus, it's a retrovirus. You need to be able to reverse transcribe the messenger RNA of the spike protein, and it's not a protein, it's a peptide. So exactly what Jim says, we have dozens of intracellular and extracellular. If it's outside the cell, it's going to be a danger-associated molecular pattern. RNA outside the cell, so if it doesn't get in there. This is what ivermectin is going to help. Outside the cell, a danger-associated molecular pattern or a pathogen-associated molecular pattern. We see in our innate immune responses patterns, and they say, oh, turn on that fire truck, and it's type 1 interferons. So that RNA cell in our first book, Plague, people with R462Q, 13% of our country, you know, arginine to glutamic acid, I believe, is Q. So what Jim was just saying, you get a different codon put in so you don't make the right amino acid. And what that does is it changes the shape of the binding pocket in alveolar macrophages. In the lungs, respiratory syncytial virus. They cause syncytia, what snake venom does, virus peptide spike envelope protein fused cells, inflammasomes that set off the flames the viruses do. So you've cloned these viruses and you've injected them in people who cannot degrade. So when the binding pocket of the enzyme changes, think of a Pac-Man that can only gobble the RNAs, the RNA viruses, and think about how many are in every flu shot with the monkeys, I mean with the birds, with the dogs, with everything I just read from the 2011 paper. What ended up in the batshit in China? You know, these came out of these cell lines. And these cell lines are not cleaned up. They grow the virus every year in more cow blood and more bird blood and more pig blood. And you can't degrade the RNA viruses. Our MMR, three RNA viruses. So people with RNA-L, R462Q, which a lot of blacks, and this, we knew exactly who these people are. These are the people whose XMRV integrated into their genomes in CPG islands, which this places where you silence them, you can't do that, and drove the disease. So there is 13% of our country, and this was our first book. This was our discovery. Oops. These people are more susceptible. This is why, one reason. If you give MMR to people, little black boys, Hispanics, Indonesians, 13% of our population, before they're 3 years old and they're degradatory, their liver, their kidney, their other degradation pathways can gobble these up like Pac-Man. You gobble these are signaling molecules when they're not formed. That's why you create prions. That's what syncytin does. It fuses cells together. So those misfolded stop codons, you have no idea the storm this is going to cause when you inject it in the most vulnerable. They can't gobble them up like a Pac-Man. They can't degrade them, so they end up driving disease, and the fire turn off the fire. And this is in 1997. So now we have a shadow of a doubt.
Got some bad background
Robert
noise on one
Silverman,
line.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
Now we
the FBI, they tend
a...
to do that when Dr. Judy starts dropping truth bombs. The FBI.
Okay. Well, FBI, you want to
yeah,
do like the rest
that?
Of us
yeah,
do.
They love,
yeah,
they
yeah.
love doing that. Yeah, they love
yeah,
that.
Okay. KGB.
But again,
FBI.
So Robert Silverman made the infectious molecular clone of XMRV, associated it with deadly prostate cancer and breast cancers as well. And who gets more of those? Black people. And what happened in that one? With MMR vaccines, oh, you did your experiment, and they proved the people with these, you know, and I literally wrote this. They're causing this because they're injecting these mRNAs of monkeys, birds, cows, in people who can't degrade them, and they know who it is. And when they found out there was a more susceptible population, then they were liable if they didn't make them safer and filter out all the other RNA pieces and parts. That's the point. And they can't keep them in freezers. So, John, to your data, the data in San Diego at one of the first injection drive-by shootings at a stadium, a lot of people died, had serious injuries, paralysis. They got one of those lots that wasn't stored in a freezer in January of 2021.
I'm afraid that the data that we see coming out of Vietnam, coming out of Thailand, where there weren't 100 people that had died with COVID prior to the inoculations. These
Correct.
Are countries where people are dying. And today, Vietnam has over 40,000 dead. And when we look at the map, we see a correlation between the inoculations and the deaths. It's almost direct. Same thing in Thailand. So what I've been wondering, Greg, is this temperature management issue early on when Pfizer's distributing a product that needs to be stored at negative 70. Brooke Jackson tells us we couldn't do it in Dallas, let alone the jewels of Vietnam.
Yeah.
If we can't do it in Dallas, how are we supposed to do it in Chiang Rai?
And there's no guarantee that the instructions were given on that, because we know the inserts aren't there. You know, in fact, it's one of the sections of my bill where I talked about, you know, that where they say the inserts are assumed to be provided. Well, you can't assume that. You know, so you have no idea if people are even getting the instructions to put these things at a temperature. You know, I mean,
so
that's probably part of the design.
Well, imagine if there's a direct correlation between this temperature issue and the death in countries
that noise is driving me
managing
crazy.
It. I know. Can you tell which line it's coming from?
I just have to mute everybody.
If you mute Dr. Judy and we still get the noise, that means it's my line.
I'm going to mute you just for a second, John, just because it's your idea. It's not John. Let's try Judy real quick. And it might be Judy's line. I don't hear it right now, it's hard to know when you don't hear it. Well, here's the question I have. Could this be by design, that they're purposely not instructing people that these things are engineered to be stable at negative 200 degrees, but they know full well that they're not going to be maintained at that around the world? Are they designed to change once they get to a certain temperature? Judy, is that engineered to
absolutely are designed. Absolutely designed to change. That was an experiment on the first lot. They knew it. And again, this is why, because they had to figure this out, because they know people don't store these and unplug and this and that. Yeah, they absolutely by design. What makes them stronger? I'm sending you guys two papers right now.
Yeah, it sounds like the gain of function. I was tempted to bring this up when Emerald was here, but the real gain of function is the Spanish flu, adding this in. It's all the things that are brought in, and making them more deadly. So the gain of function is not Wuhan, it's not COVID, it's got nothing to do with that. But their own gain of function is the two viruses, is the increase in, you know, in all the things they're putting in the flu vaccine. So that's their gain of function. I think it's Jim's line.
Gain of function is taking place everywhere. Gain of function is taking place in Galveston, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Hungary, Moldova. Everybody in this business is doing gain of function. That's what they do.
Okay.
That's what they do. And when the United States says, well, we can't do gain of function right now because we're going to have a moratorium, we go do it in other places. We go do it in the Ukraine. Right, so that's what's been going on, is we do it all over the world in other places. We send them our money, and then we've got plausible deniability to say, well, we didn't do this. We had nothing to do with that. This wasn't us. Right, so we've been doing this all over the world then.
Yeah, let me actually, I've got a couple of different questions here. And so, Sheila, feel free to join us, and Brian. And Jim, I need you to call back. So I'm going to hang up your line. Your line is the one that's got the static on it, so maybe you just call back. Don't be offended when you hear that you're not here anymore, but that's – There we go. So Jim just called back in. Judy, we never really talked about this, but the lungs seem to be the organ of choice that they seem to be targeting with the viruses, with the snake oil vaccines, you know, whether it's flu, whether it's Spanish flu, regular flu, COVID, all these things seem to be lung diseases first. Yes, it gets to the heart and other things with the snake oil jabs and the boosters. But is there a particular reason they go after lungs? Is that easier to develop things for, or makes us more vulnerable? I mean, obviously they're necessary for our life, but why lungs?
Well, yeah, because that's where your alveolar macrophages, you know, will recognize all these different families of viruses. And unfortunately, it's easy to spread. Think about HIV. You know, LAV didn't spread to anybody except gay men doing a lot of different things and with a lot of different co-infections, because LAV was a slow virus with a lot of silencing. And think about, oh, it was really hard to isolate it from saliva. It's really hard to spread the AIDS around. Even when they injected the HBV, as long as the innate immune system, people get sick. That's your in route and exposure to the innate immune system. That's where you have the strongest, the alveolar macrophages. That's what, and I'm just sending you these papers so you can see how respiratory syncytial virus, remember, that was the first mRNA type vaccine, respiratory syncytial virus. So this is what they were just studying, the RNA decay. How fast does it break down? And that was the vaccine that killed the children when we did it this way. Why lungs? It spreads fastest. You can't see it. It goes through all the mass. Then you concentrate the bacteria on the mass and you suffocate, because the alveolar macrophages will leave the cytokine storm on. So it spreads fastest through the population if you target crippling the alveolar macrophage.
Can we use that as evidence, as like motivation? What's what I'm trying to think of? Premeditation, that they specifically targeted lungs? Can we put that into our equation here?
Absolutely. That's what I'm targeting with the murder of my husband, COPD. Look at the commercials. You know, he died of a bacterial pneumonia they refused to treat, and he was on ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, not a single RNA virus in his body, not one. And yet they said he died of COVID and he had COPD and they tortured him to death.
Dr. Judy just said something a minute ago, though. Go ahead, Sheila.
This is Sheila. It was in the 2002 patent, 7279327, issued to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Ralph Barrick. The purpose was to target human lung epithelium. We have comments from Dr. Xizing Li how they specifically had to go modify it to get a better fit to ACE2 receptors. So, yeah, it was on purpose, by design, to go after the lungs.
Interesting. John?
And Dr. Judy said something, though, that I don't think people were aware of. A minute ago, Dr. Judy said we were using mRNA years ago
for flu vaccine.
And I think people who are listening might be scratching their heads and go, "What? I thought this was brand new stuff." So I want Dr. Judy to talk a little bit about the difference between what we used to do, which was we used to put an RNA strand inside of a coronavirus that was inert. And we use these inert coronaviruses as the capsule. These new ones are using synthetic capsules that have a little hinge in them. It looks like a clamshell. And it opens up inside the cell. But before we had these synthetic capsules, we were using quote-unquote inert coronaviruses to get through the cell wall and deliver the RNA. Is that right, Dr. Judy? Am I getting that right, or am I completely butchering this?
Correct. That's what we have to understand, that these have all been synthetic viruses. I call them XMRVs. Mouse, monkey, and manufactured. So this whole, there's no such thing as a virus that causes disease. There's no such thing as influenza. No, Fauci's been manufacturing hundreds of viruses in animal cell lines. Oh, you didn't isolate it from, no, we didn't isolate the monkey virus, SARS-CoV-2, from a human disease, because we had to transfect it. We had to inject it. because our immune system prevents those from going in the cell because it has to, you know, it has to, a lipid bilayer, so a synthetic. So we've been using monkey viruses. It buds out of the monkey cell line, VRO-E6. Everybody's like, VRO, okay, it's VRO. That's the manufacturing plant. That's for many vaccines, children's polio vaccines. Oh, the VRO monkey kidney cell is where I found a clone called E6 in 1992 or 3. I made a single cell clone that Ebola would not kill, Ebola Zaire. And then I showed that Ebola Zaire, the one that killed everybody, had the same cytokine storm in the alveolar monocyte lung macrophage, blew it up, destroyed the tissue. But the Reston strain from the CIA in Reston, Virginia. Oh, how'd you get a Reston strain of a virus and, you know, that came from a bat cage? You know, this is what people don't realize. They've been doing this since the 90s, and Tony Fauci just released that on Sierra Leone, Liberia, to cover up the MMR in black boys and William Thompson's confession 15 years later, and vaxxed. So, and then did it again with Zika, and did it again. You know, these viruses aren't expressed from, you know, Zika doesn't bother anybody. It's not that they're not there. It's they don't infect. So it's infection by injection in a synthetic lipid nanoparticle, the virus-like particle of the HBV vaccine, of the Gardasil vaccine, where you put a sequence, you put a genomic sequence that can make the deadly part of the virus. You don't need an entire virus if you protected that RNA from degradation in a synthetic lipid nanoparticle. So what people don't understand is they've been injecting monkey, cow, pig, bird, you name it, horse viruses into people because they use horse cells, mouse cell lines, right. Dog cell lines, human embryonic kidney cell lines. Well, when you put human embryonic kidney cell from people growing continuously, the virus from another human buds out into a human, and you're going to see that's not mine, that's not me, that's not self, and you're going to create an autoimmune and autoinflammatory, which normally you can silence the flame. But if you inject over and over and over again, thousands, just look at the paper, how many viruses were in the bat shit in China. You know, sequences.
Dr. Judy, this sounds like the rationale to stop doing cultures. If we continued
Correct.
Doing cultures past 2017, I'd be sitting there in the lab going, what the hell is this? How does my patient have a horse virus? This is an equine virus. Why is there an equine
Correct.
Virus growing on my culture?
Correct. And if you look, that was the big discovery, why I had to go away. Oops, xenotransplantation.
Xenotropic.
That would be
and that's why
anytime.
You stop doing cultures.
Xenotropic. Correct. And that's what the first thing in 2009. July 22nd in our book, when we showed this to the entire NIH, John Coffin, who spearheaded and did the destruction of Judy Mikovits' career and make XMRV go away with Ian Lipkin. John Coffin, the reviewer of the paper. Oh, wait a minute. Somebody in one of those comedians, when they laughed at me, said, oh, if that man reviewed the paper, all bets are off. They knew exactly what they were doing. That man admitted on film that's heavily censored, that hasn't come
Dr.
out
Jim?
Yet, 2 years ago.
Jim,
that
do you see the
paper.
Evil genius here? Jim, you see the evil genius here? You stop doing cultures, and you won't find any of these XMRVs. If you move exclusively to PCR tests, it's like threading the needle, and we won't find anything we don't really want to find. It's
exactly
pretty
correct.
Diabolical.
We can totally manipulate the narrative based upon the priming sequence in the PCR and based upon the
it's
number
exactly
of cycles.
Exactly what happened.
And
exactly
and
what happened.
The other thing that's really important to note from that is a PCR has never been shown to improve clinical outcomes. Zero. It never has. It's proven to be a massive, massive money maker for tens of thousands of people around the world. So the PCR technology, I think to the point that you're making, John and Judy, I agree with. There is no improvement in outcomes with a test. Zero. The improvement in outcomes comes from early treatment diagnostics.
And if the diagnostic tool that you're using is only going to detect 22 pathogens, period, and it may not detect the one that your patient is infected with. Again, I've said it before, that tuberculosis is not in the respiratory pathogen array from BioFire or EPLEX.
Do you know the 22 things they test for in the PCR test? Did you ever talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. They've got respiratory syncytial virus, RSVs in there. There's some parainfluenza. They tell you they've got – it's five strains of influenza. But,
like what?
But influenza 129? Has like an H and an N. Yeah, yep. The 198. So it's 11 and 18. So it's 11 and 18.
That's useful. We've got 198 witnesses. We're only going to talk to 22 of them.
Well, and the really important part is PDM09, the strain from 2009, is not the same as the H1N1 1918 strain. The 1918 strain is BSL4. They don't give that to BioFire. They don't hand that out. That's supposedly just in the lab. So what Jim was just saying, you can control the narrative with the PCR test. You decide what people are. In fact, one of the private conversations that I had with Laura Ingram early on.
Not so private now. We're on the radio.
Right. Sorry, well, I said to her, if you let me develop the test, let me build the test kit. Tell me what percentage of the population you want to test positive. Give me a number. I'll make it happen. You want 83% of the population to test positive for COVID? I'll make you a test that will tell you 83% of the people who take the test are positive.
Yeah, so many cycles, right? Normal is like 20 cycles of whatever they do, and they do ramp it up to like 35, 40. You can test it on a watermelon. Is that how they do it?
Well, yeah, imagine if the story that I told Emerald earlier, if the culprit wasn't reconstructed pandemic influenza. So assume it wasn't that, and assume it was some gain-of-function tuberculosis that they had been monkeying with, right? So let's say we amped up tuberculosis to make
they
it.
They are.
Right, exactly, right? Why wouldn't they, right? Why wouldn't they? And so, again, it's the same story. Tuberculosis isn't in the PCR test. And every doctor,
which
could
is a primary
have
lung
just
disease.
As easily have been.
It's like when
correct.
Lung
and so every
there
doctor
there.
Would have been fooled just as easily is the point. Every doctor would have been fooled just as easily if had it been because tuberculosis isn't in the PCR test.
Right.
And it comes back to your positive for COVID.
This literally was the last line of our first book. The last line of our first book is they find what they want to find, and that's the real play.
Well, they want you to find.
That's exactly
right. Remember,
you
August 31st of 2011, they published a fraudulent paper, 2011, August 31st. They had a PCR test that literally, I don't even know how many people were testing positive. But they changed the test so that it found nothing. This is what I wrote in the email to the head of the National Heart, Blood, Lung, and Institute on August 31st, 2011, when they threatened us. You retract your paper or we'll take your life. You know, they carried out the threat on me. And Frank Rossetti said, we got to figure this out, stay in the game. But in that email, I said, how many new viruses have we created, John Coffin, and I don't mean Jesus Christ, is what I said. And I said, how many? And then did take a PCR test with a cutoff so high, it wouldn't find a willing Roman in a whorehouse. or should we say in the White House? You know, this is what we're trying to say. I wrote that email to the head of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute when they were doing this. August 31st, 2011, Science, the journal, putting out positive. Go find it. You know, that's the talk I gave at Truth About Cancer, showing how they walk through and plan the whole thing. That's why you can't say XMRV and COVID at the same time. That's why, you know, Fleming, anybody else, oh, you can't say snake venom. Yeah, because it proves they knew exactly what they were doing was consistent, driving the disease, murdering the people. You know, and I wrote in that email, I'll make this. I'll spend the rest of my life making this fraud, you know, available. I mean, how many millions have they killed with this shot as we had to sit by because nobody, because these books are so heavily censored. We've got to get the law that stops the censorship. When these books aren't even in the library in the entire state of Maryland, how can our doctors not know? How can our doctors not know there are 100-year-old essential medicines where you need a treatment, a drop every 2 months? And they took this away from children, Bayer, Monsanto in 2015. How could, you know, this is pure evil.
What did they take away, Judy?
Sermon.
Which
how
is
did they take it away?
Sermon.
What, how did they
the
take it away?
The antidote for everything they've created. Sermon. S-U-R-A-M-I-N. A purinergic modulator just like ivermectin. Yeah, double-blind placebo-controlled study when a smart doctor, a good doctor, read our work in 2011. We consented people in the study. No, it's not everybody that's tired. It's everybody with an inflammatory cytokine signature. So what do? You erase everything Frank Rossetti and Judy Mikovits did from the database. You lock down her labs. Oh, you surround the labs. You take away everything. Literally, four decades of handwritten notebooks. And then you create a narrative between 2011 and 2019, and you release it. That's what they did.
Who has the patent on Cerumen?
There's no patent. It's 100 years old.
Did they ban it?
It's an essential medicine.
What do they do?
Monsanto owns it, and the FDA won't let you have it. It's 100-year-old essential medicine. Just like ivermectin, there is no patent. That's why they're releasing one now and say, oh, buy American. No, you caused this. Don't buy American. My God, pay $10 a pill for something that costs 30 cents, ivermectin. That's criminal. The victims of this plague of corruption, the United States people, the worldwide people, should not be paying again. We made thousands of fabulous drugs, and they all should be available to any doctor who wants to use them with nutritional support. We can cure all of this right now, and I'm going to use cure with the cancer, and all we have to do is stop poisoning people with glyphosate in these injections.
Okay. How can Bayer own it if it's not patented?
Go ask Bayer Monsanto.
Yeah.
We can't order it, just like Merck, or, you know, go ask people who make ivermectin. Why can't we order? We've been trying to get
it. Here's what I've got.
Well, wait a minute.
I've got it in front of me right here.
Why don't we start another company?
Let me read to you what it says. Cerumen's a 100-year-old drug developed to treat African sleeping sickness and river blindness. Although it has been investigated for other diseases, including cancer, it's not approved for any therapeutic use in the United States.
Okay.
So
can we change it, call it another name, use the Alternative Medicine Network? Is there another way to get this into circulation? Judy.
How about just close the FDA or
well, I want to
reorganize
do that too.
It? Their job is safety. Their job is safety. We know these drugs. It's a 100-year-old essential medicine. And in the review, this is Brian Artis. This is what he asked me in January. He said, Judy, is Cerumen an antidote for snake venom? And I said, of course it is, Brian. It's a sodium potassium ATPase. He rolled his eyes, as I knew he would. And he said, show me the paper. And I said, oh, how interesting. They just did a 100-year review in January 2020. And it says Zika. It says Ebola. It says HIV. It says arthritis. It says snake bite. You need a drop. And literally, they took the drug. The FDA is criminal. Close them. Clean house. They gave themselves the authority for efficacy of drugs. They gave themselves the authority to decide what gets used. This was the problem. Use it wrong. Use it at the wrong time. Peptide tea would have stopped AIDS. We are the Dallas Buyers Club now. Do you know they're stopping packages? When we send ivermectin that costs 50 cents around the world, they're stopping the packages. We've lost thousands of dollars of packages. And here's people, oh, let's just buy it, America. We're going to release the ivermectin. It's okay now, and the big pharma is going to make the money. And at $10 a pill, when it should cost 50 cents a pill, now nobody can get ivermectin. Thurman has to be infused because it has to be infused because you need so little. If you use it wrong, you'll kill people. We use Thurman against various virus-associated cancers, against AIDS. We know exactly how to use it, and yet nobody will let anybody use it. It's not approved for anything. I'm tired of your approval. Go away. You're criminal. You've murdered people with remdesivir. It's all in our books. You know, they've done it for
it's
four
sold.
Decades. It's
so
time
still,
it goes
they sell
away.
Thurman. They sell Thurman, but it's not available in the USA, but it is made by Bayer. And it's called Germanin, G-E-R-M-A-N-I-N, but it has to be done intravenously. So you got to get a doctor to do it. So I'm interested in this because I have a child, Dr. Judy, who has severe autism and has speech apraxia. But the idea of going
to have... It's so fabulous. We know exactly how to use it. It's so fabulous. We've got hundreds of purinergic modulators. We use one called Brilinta to keep plaques from forming on cardiac stents and other things. My husband used it. It's fabulous. You can use these things at very low dose. We can change the world by simply ending these cabals right now, stopping all the shots, like we say, hashtag stop the shots. You know, stop all of this and allow the good scientists. Put Stephanie Seneff ahead of the FDA. Put David Lewis ahead. He wrote Science for Sale, Whistleblowers, Corruption, ahead of the EPA. And let's fix this. That's all we need to do. No more efficacy. If something is as safe as something used 100 years safely, African sleeping sickness, Ebola, you know, again, ivermectin. Leave it alone at 50 cents a pill. Don't charge the people $10 because then the same people you injured with your mandate and who can't eat clean food and you've already injured with every polio vaccine, everybody with COPD, itis. It's not their cigarette smoking, folks. It's not their cannabis abuse, folks. It's your poisoning. And all we have to do to fix it is clean up these dirty societies.
Let me ask you a question, because my activist side is coming out. Have any of the states, and I'm thinking Florida and possibly Arizona when Carrie Lake gets there, have any of the states defied the FDA and said, we're going to produce this drug here in our state? We don't care what you say. We know this is safe and effective. We have our own FDA. We have our own public health department, like Lapidow here, Surgeon General Lapidow here in Florida. Could a state be encouraged to produce this? And I mean, the federal government literally has no jurisdiction over health. There's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes them, delegates any authority over health at all. So everything they do is unconstitutional.
Correct.
Given that, the states could, or a state could, have a state industry, drug industry, that could set up a company that could make this stuff, right?
Greg, this is Sheila.
Yeah.
These are comments that are being made at the Texas Health and Human Services Committee about the need for Texas, because we are such a big state and we do have UT Galveston Medical Branch and we do have, quote, the largest medical facility in Houston,
right.
Talking about manufacturing our own, when I say our own, U.S. owned, but in Texas,
pharmaceutical products that are needed. So this sounds like a perfect thing to start some discussion to target what should we start with if what...
Yeah, give me three right now. Well, four of them. Zofluza, Serenim, hydroxychloroquine, and ivermectin. You should...
No, Zofluza is patented. You can't do Zofluza because it's a Japanese and a patent.
Okay, but you can do the other three, right?
Well,
yeah, patents have to have expired. Yeah.
Okay.
But in June of 2020, at the Texas Medical Board meeting, I got out of the general counsel that ozone, as with any other therapy the physician thought appropriate, would be permissible to treat COVID. Now, that was huge because that was June of 2020 when the NIH guidelines were saying don't treat unless it's in a clinical trial. That was picked up by the Texas Medical Association. So we do have some capacity under complementary alternative medicine laws, which most states have, to be able to use drugs off-label. So that gets the doctor past the FDA problem, but what comes in play is that they can't advertise for it because that's a violation of 15 U.S.C.
Oh, we got social media. We can bypass that. But the FDA is like the profit guardian of big pharma. That's the whole reason we have an FDA, is to guard, you know, to protect big pharma from losing profits and prevent products that come on the market, as Judy says, that are 30 cents as opposed to, you know, 10 bucks or what, 4,500 for remdesivir.
Well,
so Sheila, can you get this to do you have a bill
exactly
for the Texas legislature?
Greg.
Okay, Jim, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, that's exactly right. What's happened is that, you know, back in the early 80s, the CDC and the FDA had some very significant, maybe I'm remembering wrong because I was young and naive then, but they commandeered much more respect and credibility. But since then, with the massive hundreds of patents, vaccine patents that the FDA and CDC owns, and all of the individuals associated with them, it's stunning to realize right now that almost half of the annual budget of the FDA and CDC are comprise the vaccine industry profits. So now the FDA and the CDC are on their knees to the pharmaceutical company, worshiping them as false gods.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's two things we need. There's two bills we need to do. The product vaccine product liability is one. The second one I want to do is revoke that 1976 Bayh-Dole Act, which allowed government employees to license, patent, and get royalties off drugs. You remember that court fight between Moderna and the NIH as to who's going to get the money? That wasn't that long. It was like a year or so ago. And so there's another bill we can do. So the legislation, you know, it's going to be in the works. But I think I'm going to work on Florida. Sheila, if you can work on Texas, let's see if we can get – and, of course, Jim's in Florida. Ben's here. You know, we've got Deborah Viglione. She's here. We've got a lot of doctors in Florida, you know, that we can do something. And I've got a contact finally now from a friend of mine, one of the state representatives, where I can actually contact the governor's office. So I'm going to see if I can get a representative of them on. Let's start state drug industries. Let's start companies that can make these things, and screw the FDA. We don't need their approval. If it gets state approval, we don't need federal approval, right? Let's break some new law here. Who likes this idea?
I love it.
All right. I
went
to
Mike Adams last week. He can make it.
At the Texas GOP convention, by the grace of God, in the last 2 minutes that we had to get something on a platform, each party has a platform that's supposed to be how the legislators establish law based upon the will of the people that happen at these conventions. We got on there to prohibit gain-of-function research and funding and criminal charges for those who participate in it. We also got in that individuals have sovereign rights over their DNA, even if it's been altered. So there were a couple things that we were really able to get presented to the 10,000 delegates of Texas to kind of raise some awareness. From working with these different people who are actively on the front lines trying to stop this, it's the awareness of the public that is the biggest missing attribute.
Oh, believe me, I face that every day. You should, if you're looking for information, or if you're looking for ideas, I wrote a Bill of Rights for Australia with Jen Clark, who's one of their, was one of the founding trucker convoy people going to Canberra. And so there's a lot of things in there that you might want for Texas. So it's either in our citizen bill ideas or our all proposed laws. I think it's all proposed laws now. But that's a whole complete thing of mind-body autonomy, freedom from dangerous technologies, 5G, things like that, you know, choice of living, energy, you know, all kinds of travel, all kinds of stuff that Texas may want to adopt. And if it goes from Texas, maybe we can possibly do some constitutional amendments for the federal constitution. But at least Texas and Florida, you know, probably South Dakota too, are the three most likely states to make this kind of innovation. Now, I tried to get Kristi Noem on the show, too, governor of South Dakota. I'll keep working on that. But these are the places where this is going to have to happen. It has to happen in the states because the federal government, again, the FDA is so co-opted that they're useless. Congress takes all their money from the FDA and big pharma, or from big pharma, so they're useless. But I think we've opened up something really special here and very, very, very powerful in that we had Emerald Robinson on the show today from Lindell TV. That's Mike Lindell. That means Steve Bannon. That means Donald Trump. That means some really powerful people, especially if Trump comes back, you know, for the presidency. You know, the things we've opened up here today with an amazing contact, now we can start to report these things to many, many more people. And so once they start getting the idea, especially in Texas, that Texas could have its own drug industry, that Florida could have its own drug industry, states have their own energy industry, why can't they have a drug industry? So the potential of opening up these – go ahead, John, and then someone else.
Yeah, I think I think what we've seen, you know, one of the sort of side effects of this COVID thing is the pendulum seems to have swung back a little bit towards states' rights and less federalism. And, you know, because of people like Ron DeSantis, right, and his approach versus what we saw in California and what we saw in New York. And this is an interesting thing. And so this notion of, well, what would happen if Texas or Florida were to decide to manufacture? And we're going to make hydroxychloroquine. Yeah, we're going to make them here in the state. And if you need it, you can get it.
Yeah.
And what's the FDA going to do?
And we could ship
what's the FDA going to do?
Yeah, I think that Congress is going to try and ban the interstate transportation of these things. Well, people will just come here.
Well, like
they
said, it's not in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about medicine. So the FDA is definitely overstepping the Constitution.
Well,
we know
that shouldn't exist. Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, let me get to work on that. This is my project for this week. I'll see what I can do. Sheila, if you can work on Texas, I'll report back from Florida. Like I say, the more people get involved with the show, the more people we meet, the closer we get to these centers of power. And the Florida legislature is going to meet, I guess, January. So we got time. We got time to write a nice bill. You know, the Florida Entrepreneurial Pharmaceutical Act. How's that sound?
I like
love it.
Okay. Smooth.
I'm good at this.
What John brought up and Jim brought up about the degradation of the mRNA creating genetic complications of the cell. It sounds like an abnormal. The cell gets the wrong information. The ribosomes get the wrong formula, the wrong recipe for what protein they're supposed to produce. And that, did I hear you right, Jim, saying that cell will continue to produce the wrong information that it got from the faulty, degraded mRNA from the Pfizer injection that were not kept at the negative, 70, 80 degrees? Temperature? Will that continue?
Yes, and there's no knowing how it will continue because it depends on the state of the person's immune system. So the more crippled they are, that's why the booster will show more immediate effects or the second dose or the third dose, because you just get that under control where you turn the flame down and you get hit up with a bunch more and then you can't respond. It's called anergic. You can't make enough type 1 interferon to get the B cell, the regulatory B cell, to make the right class of antibodies because you injected it. So it didn't come through the gut. It didn't come to the IgA. The thing, your innate immune response doesn't know what to do, and it just goes into, like, excuse me, your computer or your phone when it just, everything just starts jumping. It's on tilt. On a pinball machine. That's what we used to call AIDS. It's a pinball machine on tilt. It can't function because it just got so overwhelmed with these pieces and parts that shouldn't be there, and the flame just goes so high That's myocarditis. That's why the instant heart attack. It's literally like electrocution.
Okay, this is what I heard that's very disturbing, because Jim was saying that that creates an abnormally folded protein known as a prion, or also referred to as amyloid plaques. Is that correct, Judy?
Correct. And this is why you're seeing the explosion in Alzheimer's disease. And so you get the abnormal production of pieces and parts of lots of viruses, lots of microRNAs. Just type in microRNA. I'm going to look for some papers. Small inhibitory RNA, how we use those in cancer specifically. You know, these are the fire trucks going to the fire to turn it off. You know, an exosome is taking your own message, and it can't do the job.
The reason I'm bringing this up is based upon the Pfizer release document of cumulative analysis of post-authorization adverse events, entitled List of Adverse Events of Special Interest. Number one is 1p36 deletion syndrome, which is accompanied symptomatic of retardation. But if you look up amyloid, there are 14 instances of it. Now, remember for the audience, this is an abnormally folded plaque that if it occurs in the area of the brain associated with the symptoms of Alzheimer's, those are referred to as tau proteins, TAU. If they happen to accumulate in the area of brain associated with the symptoms of Parkinson's, those are called Lewy bodies. And then you've got your prions referred to, which most people refer, knowing what it is mad cow disease, which is Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. But when I look at this list of adverse events of special interest, I mean, that's above the normal adverse events of what we're seeing. These are special. There are 14 instances of amyloid, amyloidosis, amyloidosis senile, cardiac amyloidosis, cerebral amyloid, angioplasma, cutaneous, which is skin amyloidosis, dialysis amyloidosis.
Okay, you're losing me in terminology here.
Well, it's okay. So they're seeing these plaques show up in this study in the brain, in the skin, in the kidneys, in the liver, in primary, in the lungs, in the renal, kidneys again, secondary, whatever that is, in the tongue. So it's turning that it's showing up in all these different areas of this prion disease. Well, I was familiar with the study that we knew about back in January 15th of 2021, which is on the poster that I walked around, entitled, Is SARS-CoV-2 a Bioweapon? Going, yes, it is. I mean, this is when we first started back in the session. And in this study out of Boston University School of Medicine, what you have is the study entitled Fatal Neuroinvasion of SARS-CoV-2 in Genetically Altered Mice.
Okay, let me focus you in here a bit. Where are we going? Tell me where we're leading with this, because are we getting to a specific action? I mean, I get lost in studies. I hear studies. Nobody remembers studies unless we have them,
right.
and Judy sends it to us. So tell me where we're going.
The moral of the story is, what I was aware of until this conversation was that in the architecture of the spike protein itself is what's referred to as a prion regional domain. And when I was visiting with Kevin McCarn, who's the researcher out of Japan, who's been researching large ape brains for 20 years, when he described it to me, I said, that sounds like a jello mold. It's not a prion. The spike protein itself
this is from your poster stuff. Is this something we can about? Have we got a particular disease component? Is it part of a vaccine? Because I remember we talked about your poster before, too. It's huge. Tell me where we're going.
From the presence of the spike protein itself, of every one of those had that little component that could take a normal protein, put it in the gel mode and come out. Now I'm finding, from what just came up today, that process could also occur from degraded mRNA from vaccines that were not stored correctly.
Okay. Judy?
Yes. Right. Yeah, all of that stuff All of that stuff, that's what I'm just saying. She's, and so what happens in those organ systems, that's what I say, is each organ system has a resident stem cell macrophage. In the lung, it's the alveolar macrophage. In the liver, it's the Kupffer, microglia in the brain. So those different tissue compartments recognize different fragments of RNA, and they become inflammatory. So when they're expressed there in the skin, you see all these skin lesions, you know, and it's not monkeypox at all. It's the inflammation. So this is the lie. They know exactly how to create whatever they want. And they just, they're calling them all amyloidosis, and just said it's just talking about the explosion in, let's just say, dementia, Alzheimer's disease, all kinds of different kinds, depending on where the explosion, where the flame is, and where those, you know, they used to call it a Lewy body, as Sheila just is all, when you see those things sticking together, how they're sticking them together is with that syncytin. That means synthesized cells, S-Y-N-C-Y-T-O, synthesized cells together. That's the fusogenic protein that holds the fertilized embryo into the uterine cell walls, like Velcro. That's by definition a prion. Imagine dominoes falling over. You know, and dominoes falling over, and how they trick them into falling to stick together as close as they come to cause the multiple organ system damage. So you can target the organ system with the drug you formulate. If it's the skin, do a balm. So we can fix all of this, and we know, I mean, we really know exactly how to fix it. And so all people,
well, they know
to
how to, they know how to screw it up too. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break again, but I'm sorry, did I make a mistake? Judy, go ahead.
No, God is better. God's got all of it. If we stop listening to them and stop injecting anything, we can stop it all right now.
Yeah. And that's what I'm working on. This is why I say we have some new context. We have a bigger, we're going to get a bigger audience because of what's happening now with folks like Emerald Robinson, and who knows who else we can attract at Lindell TV and other networks as we build this. I got a couple of big questions that I wanted to think about for a little bit. The first one is who's behind the Faucis? Who's behind this? When you talk about targeting blacks and targeting Jews and targeting religious, ethnic, national groups, it sounds to me like eugenics. It sounds like it goes back. So that's my question is, does this, is, you know, are the, is Fauci a eugenicist like Margaret Sanger was, you know, for Planned Parenthood? Does this go back 100 years, 200 years? How far back does this go? That's the first question I want you to think about. The second question I want you all to think about is the fact that President Trump, I think, had COVID twice, and the second time was far more serious. He was, I'm sure, denied hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, all the things that we know work. So my question is, in denying that, especially by Dr. Fascist and all the other folks and the health Nazis there in the various agencies, is denying the President of the United States treatments that they know work for the disease he has, could that be considered an assassination attempt? I know that's a big, bold statement, but I want you to think about that, because not only did they want to, you know, destroy the Trump presidency, I have a feeling they want to destroy him too. And were they going to use COVID by denying him the treatments they were denying to millions of people across this country, could that have been considered a criminal conspiracy enough to raise to that level? I don't know. I'm just asking the questions. Think about that. Let me scroll down here. I was so wrapped up in my question, I forgot to queue up my next thing. So we're going to take a little break here, mute you off for a little bit. So those two things, eugenics and how serious does this go? You know, they wanted to destroy the Trump presidency, but did they want to destroy him too? That's my question. Back in just a little bit. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And we have less than an hour left, so I'm going to bring back my panel. Start again, Greg. Bring back my panel. We've got Dr. Judy Mikovits. Let's make your line live. We've got John Cullen. We've got Sheila Hempel. Hope I pronounced that right. Dr. Brian Artis. And Priscilla Romans is joining us also for a little bit here. So let me get her comments real quick, and then I'll have then I got my two rather large questions I left you with to ponder, you know, as we come back here. Priscilla, welcome back.
Hey, everybody. We're coming up against a great holiday weekend. Hopefully everybody's doing great.
Okay. So I made you a Graith Care announcement. Have you ever played it when you were here? You've heard my one, right?
No.
Oh, you haven't heard
it? No.
Okay.
Healthcare still sucks, though. I'll tell you that.
At the risk of repeating myself, let me play this for you real quick. So this is how I do you guys. So this will only take a minute. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Graith Care. And now as an affiliate of Graith Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Graith Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is graithcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at graithcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. So how's that?
I loved it. You could. I don't even need to say anything anymore. That's exactly what it is. And we're excited. We're excited to just be helping people. Healthcare does really suck right now for a whole lot of people out there, and we've got to get to people a lot sooner because it is unraveling. We're getting the craziest phone calls. Judy, Dr. Artis, they've probably heard and gotten emails on similar issues, and people are just really struggling.
Let's take a minute and find out which ones, and then we can get Judy and Brian, and who hasn't spoken for a bit, and John and Sheila. But what are some of the big ones right now? My issue is going to
Transplants are becoming a problem, even with people that have been on a transplant list for a period of time, waiting, of course, for a life-saving. New organ, kidney, whatever it might be that the person needs. They're on these transplant lists, but these places are now denying people, of course, transplants because if they're unvaccinated, they're denying them even getting a transplant now, even having been on the list. So
it's happening.
I mean, it's happening.
Right there.
And
yeah, no, I want to get Judy's opinion.
It's insane.
I know she's going to have something on this. Judy, transplants with the COVID shot first?
Yep. Whoa. Oh, that's exactly what they're doing to everybody. They've been doing it for a year. No shot, no trans. You're a danger to everybody. We're not going to waste an organ on you. This is horrible. But they're the people they're going to kill, and they know it.
Yep. Yep.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Sheila?
Do we know if it's an insurance problem or a hospital policy problem? Who is inhibiting that? Where's the court?
So this one is out of California, and the person was on a kidney transplant list, and they were just told from their physician's office that they cannot receive a kidney because they are unvaccinated. And, of course, that person does not want to be vaccinated or PCR test, and those are things that they want to do. So we are advocating. We have a great advocate that has a very high level of transplant understanding, which that's what we do with Great Care. We have specific advocates with different backgrounds because you have to understand the language. So she's going to work on this case, and if we need to jump through some big hoops and make some big stinks about this to make sure the American public understands that they do have medical freedom. Some of these things are harder to get done than others, but is it worth it? It's 100% worth it to fight for these people.
Did you hear the early part of the show with Emerald Robinson? Because her grandmothers could probably use you guys as an advocate.
No, I have not.
Okay. Sheila.
NBC reported transplant patient makes life-saving move to North Texas. Anyone being denied clinical life-saving organ transplant is welcome here in Texas, where one's rights and freedoms are always respected. Texas State Representative Briscoe Kane told Fox News he was happy Texas hospitals have, for an outlease, chosen to put patients before politics.
Can you do that?
What hospital is that?
I believe it's in Texas. Texas welcomed patients denied life-saving organ. That was on Fox News.
Fox News. Okay. I'll look that up, okay. And I'll make sure my advocate, because that's what you just explained, right? We need to know options. Where can we send these people? Who is doing these things that people are looking for? Because all the other ones are completely contracted, meaning they are closed-minded. They have no open book to understanding. People will go, well, we just need to focus on natural. No, look. We can use all options. We can use allopathic, holistic, alternative. We can do it all. Why can't we do it all? Everybody's life is worth it.
This woman came from Colorado.
Okay. And it was in an NBC article?
NBC and Fox News.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hmm. Yeah, I would look to Texas, Florida, and South Dakota as the freest states when it comes to anything medical, as places that people can be transported. But I think medical transport to the appropriate states, just as the left wants everybody to come to their state for an abortion, we can go to get cured and treated, and states that are actually interested in that, and not giving someone a COVID shot before. I mean, Judy, how dangerous is that?
But
It's literally deadly. I mean, okay. And they know that. It's so far beyond. It's murder. It's premeditated murder. You can't do that anywhere. And you know, they've been doing it the entire time. I was on a show a year ago where two young men, one at University of Virginia, one up in Idaho, were being denied kidney transplants. So we're trying to get them things to delay the progression of their kidney disease. And, you know, they can't wear masks. They can't do this. This is literally, there's nothing about any of this which is not kill the people who you destroyed with your environmental toxins. Kill the most vulnerable. This was something that came from 1859, Greg, to answer your question. The bottom of Darwin's thesis says, or the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life. And this is what Patrick Wood is saying with technocracy. This is a cult trying to, you know, literally murder the people that they've experimented on as they've attempted to hack the code they cannot hack. So now they figured out they can't hack it, they can't win, but they can destroy our brains and murder us and give us cancer real quick. Yeah, it's premeditated murder of Trump and his family. Yeah.
Okay. I was curious about that.
Okay.
So who's that?
This
Priscilla?
Was in Priscilla, okay. This is Dr. Giuliano Testa, chief of the abdominal transplant at Baylor University Medical Center in Dallas.
Wow, that's at Baylor?
Baylor in Dallas.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess miracles happen. And Greg, your comment on the freer states, you know, Texas, Florida, whichever other state you said, look, there are issues South Dakota. There are issues in every single state. So I hesitate to say they're freer because I've seen some of the most ridiculous things happen in some of these places. So
okay.
I would hesitate. I wouldn't trust everybody. People need to be informed. They need to be asking questions. They need to ask them what they're hanging before it's put in their body. People need to start like really checking the box off. Do they really know what's happening? And if they don't, they better start asking more questions because it may be too late at some point. And I mean, that's just the plain truth from my perspective, because some of this stuff is, you cannot unravel some of this stuff that's happened. Sorry to be depressing, but like,
no,
that's
it's not
the
depressing.
Truth.
I'm just thinking, you know, just, and I've learned that somehow in radio, you think if there's any time, if there's any space, something's wrong. And I think the things some of you folks say are so profound that I really need to just reflect for a bit. Transplants is one issue. Did you have other two other huge issues right now that are going on? Because this is good information for us.
Yeah. The only other issue is, so when you talk about transporting people, okay,
right.
we have to sometimes find options to transport people to another state in order to give them options that they want. So there is a frontline doctor's protocol for hospitals. There is one physician out of Houston, Texas, Dr. Verone. He does get out and speak about it, but he gives options that people want for COVID-related hospitalization. So he's a pulmonary critical care doctor, and people in these other hospitals are not getting these options. Okay, so what people do is they say, well, do I go? Do I put the money into a flight? I mean, these flights are anywhere from $15,000 plus $30,000 to get an air flight lift with a respiratory therapist and a nurse. They're very expensive. Insurance isn't going to cover it. If they do cover it, it's going to take days to even get an initial approval if you can, which that delays more care. And then you get to the hospital, and then the hospital is also saying, oh, well, just make sure before you even come, we want to make sure you know if they're a Medicare patient, Medicare no longer covers us as a hospital. Okay, so this is happening to a hospital. It's UMMC down in Houston, Texas. I did tell the hospital I was going to be letting Medicare patients know this because right now we shouldn't be having less access to care. We should be having all access to care and all options on the table. And now maybe they've had some standard or conduct violations that they need to resolve. I don't know what the situation is. I can say from my perspective that they did give some very good medications to people in need that they wanted in other hospitals. And I was thankful that these patients had these other options. Now, every hospital, just like UMMC, do I think they're perfect? No, I do not. And I'll tell people frankly what I think. I don't think all hospitals communicate well. All the doctors don't talk together. They miss things. They misdiagnose things. Every hospital has these issues. But my issue right now is that for people that are 65 and older on Medicare, and do I like the government insurance, all those things? No. But if people have it, should they be able to use it? Yeah. And they should be able to get access to the things and the care that they want. So right now, this hospital cannot bill Medicare because they'll get zero reimbursement. If you know anything about hospital institutions, these large facilities, and they're not a large facility in Houston, they probably will end up closing their doors if they don't start getting funding. Then I have one less hospital to say, well, these were options. I don't have them anymore. So does that make sense what I'm saying? It's just like I'm not happy with everything, but if mm-hmm. people want to go get thiamine and IV vitamin C and ivermectin and the doctor and the patient, the doctor-patient relationship, I advocate for people. The doctor-patient relationship, they say this looks like a good option for us to try. They should be able to try that. And so I'm thankful that this Dr. Verone is doing those things and is taking a very different approach from all these other big, shiny hospitals that I have seen. So I don't know.
We need a medical freedom access bill. We need to get the government out of government medicine. We need to get government medicine out of medicine. That's what we really need to do. The more I hear about this, the worse it gets. You know, they're the ones that are causing the problems. They're killing people. They have the policies that don't work. Everything that's wrong with medicine, it usually has some base in government, is what it seems to me. And so that's like our biggest challenge right now, start working on bills like that. And like I say, now we're associated with the new media, you know, Lindell TV. And so things are going to really start happening. I think that's going to open up some amazing doors for us. Brian mentioned something earlier on in the show, and because Emerald Robinson was here, I wanted to make sure we got her the maximum time, but he had some event or something like that. We should probably catch up to that. And then since Judy answered my big question so quickly, we may or may not have to do it, but I think she pretty much summed it up. Brian, are you able to get to us here and tell us what happened? Because we haven't heard from you hardly at all this show. You had an event.
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. And what happened at the conference? I haven't even asked you about the conference you went to with the Molly James conference.
Yeah, Molly James' conference was great. Peter McCullough and I traveled there together and away from there together, and also did some filming.
And when's he coming
on
the show? And when's he coming
Nashville.
On the show? And when's he coming on
yeah.
the show? He said for a third time? Okay.
I'm sure we can.
Talk to him.
But what I was mentioning earlier was this landmark lawsuit for remdesivir deaths in hospitals, and that actually, that press release was sent out yesterday to a whole bunch of people, but it will go out even further. But it will be me testifying. Dr. Angie Farella will be there. I will introduce mm-hmm. her. Dr. Peter McCullough will be there. Dr. Lindsay will be there also. But that will be on September 7th, and this will be on the steps of the Fresno, California courthouse or capitol, whatever it is there. Actually, I'll tell you where. It is the Fresno Veterans Memorial Museum, 2425 Fresno Street, Fresno, California. Mike Adams and Brideon.tv will be streaming it live worldwide, which will be great.
Mike Adams, that's Natural News, Mike Adams, the same guy?
Exactly right, same guy.
Okay, all right, just checking.
But you can see that press conference coming up on September 7th, which will be a phenomenal thing.
And what's the lawsuit after? Because this is something Priscilla might be able to use.
Actually, this is a press release. There's a lawsuit, landmark lawsuit. 16 individuals were killed in a hospital in Fresno with the remdesivir COVID-19 protocol. So we are there actually as a part of making the world aware that these are the actions being filed that day. We're very excited about it.
Well, I call it the remdesivir ventilator death march, and have for 2 years now. Priscilla, remdesivir, what do you do when someone runs in a hospital? So this is what I want to get you guys to get. This is why I love all the different areas we have here. So someone says that their family member is in a hospital. They want to give them remdesivir. You know that doesn't work. I don't think it works for anything.
Well,
we inform them,
and it's infectious disease doctors that feel like they have the most consults that they've ever had, they get consulted on all of these cases. So they think they're the bomb diggity, but I'm just going to tell you, they're just not informing their patients about the risk. And there is a huge risk to this, and we let our clients know this. They have the right to refuse. We had one that was literally being hung up in a room, and I said, please tell me, what do you see right now? She said, I don't know what this is. I said, that's the other name for remdesivir. I said, you need to make sure that is not hooked up. You walk kindly out to the nurse's station, and you tell them to remove it from the room. And then we're going to make sure it is all over the chart that says this is you are refusing this. You can put it on as an allergy list. I don't care what it is, but you put it on. We get it on this chart because that should never go in that room again. You didn't want it. Your husband didn't want it. But they're
slipping
it in.
Yeah, but who's to stop
them
from doing it anyway? I mean, they don't care. They want to.
That's why we have to have advocates
at the
bedside.
Okay. Oh.
That's why you have to have an advocate at the bedside because the patient in the bed is exhausted, tired, in respiratory distress. All they want to go is, doctor, please just help me, do whatever to save my life. Mm-hmm. Well, they're so tired, they don't even know what the nurse is putting up or giving them because they're so tired they can't. That's why they isolated people. I believe that's why they isolated families.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Because
they
did not want questions. They didn't
that's
want
questions.
That's
what happened to our webmaster. Yeah, our webmaster was killed in a hospital. Eric Colley.
And Dr. Brian.
WriteYourLife.com, yeah.
Dr. Brian Artis spoke up on this.
Okay.
Yeah,
Brian?
And I witnessed it. Oh. I sat right in there as they killed my husband, and they tried to give him remdesivir three times, but the doctor, even against our will, as I sat in the room, they literally murdered those people in there and denied their God-given immunity. And this is what they did. I had to literally sit there for 4 days and watch them kill my husband.
I have a question for Dr. Artis and Dr. Judy. So, Dr. Artis, we're talking about remdesivir. Remdesivir was a failed drug for Ebola. So Gilead makes remdesivir to treat Ebola, or I think it was a therapeutic. I think it was therapeutic treatment for Ebola, but it doesn't get approved. It fails the clinical trial, and they're going to throw it away. It's going to the scrap heap. Why? So this is the part I don't understand, and I want both Dr. Artis and Dr. Judy to help me understand this, please. Why would you go to an Ebola treatment as your first line of defense against a coronavirus? Doesn't that seem odd? And Dr. Judy, you know about ZMapp and all the other Ebola treatment, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of them out there. Why would you go to an Ebola therapeutic to treat a coronavirus? Is there a similarity on the spike protein to the Ebola spike protein?
You get the same cytokine signature of disease, and that's another virus that's in the Vero monkey kidney cell line you've injected all over the world, calling it SARS-CoV-2.
I'm talking about the rationale coming out of the CDC. So, Dr. Artis, maybe you can help me understand this. We're in the early stages of the pandemic. We're looking for some form of therapeutic treatment for this thing. Who comes up with the idea let's turn to some kind of failed Ebola drug? That should do it.
Yeah, this is great. This is the one thing I've been talking about since May of 2020 when Anthony Fauci put out the NIH memo saying this drug we're going to approve. So here we go. You ready? This is exactly what I'm going to tell you. I've said it nonstop. The Ebola trial was the rehearsal dinner for COVID-19 and what Anthony Fauci was going to do with remdesivir. So this is what they found out with the Ebola trial. Ready?
Okay.
The Ebola trial was completely 100% funded by Anthony Fauci's NIAID department. That's number one. So for anyone to claim Anthony Fauci got bad advice about the remdesivir drug with Ebola, that's just absurd. So the actual trial for the Ebola virus, they used 4 experimental drugs. The actual trial ran from November of 2018. It published
December of 2019. So Anthony Fauci would have been getting all the updated data from the Independent Safety Board for the study that is unbiased. And in August of 2019, halfway through that one-year study from November to December, when it finally published, in August, it's actually August 9th, 2019, the Independent Safety Board informed Anthony Fauci and all of the authors for the study that remdesivir and ZMapp were being pulled from the study based on the observation that remdesivir and ZMapp were the least effective and the most deadly in the trial for Ebola. Remdesivir, however, was the winner. It had the highest mortality rate at 53%, which was the only drug that had an over 50% mortality rate. Now, before anybody even talks about the fact that 50% of people die from Ebola if they get the infection, that means remdesivir, which was the one that only had a higher than 50% death rate, had the only death rate higher than the actual disease.
Right.
If that's true.
Right.
However, in this trial set up by Fauci and the NIAID department in four areas of Africa for a whole year with four different drugs, they did not include, this is not a joke, they included infants in the trial to receive the experimental drug, even if they did not test positive for Ebola nor had symptoms. If the child was 7 days or younger and the mom PCR tested it positive for Ebola, they included the babies to receive the experimental drugs, even if unconfirmed.
This was in Sierra Leone. This was in Sierra Leone, right?
Right.
Correct, so where they injected them in 2014. That's when Obama and Fauci did it over there in Sierra Leone. And the Dr. John stopped Dr. Kent from dying with hydroxychloroquine, saline, and prayer. And they paraded that man down to the CDC in August of 2014. To
I remember
cover it up
that.
And they tried to use a Regeneron and say the CDC cured him. No, they were covering up William Thompson's confession. And I put that all in my talk for the Reckoning Fest the other day, and the cameraman walked away. You know, that I had the since science retired, my talk was a walk down crimes against humanity's lane. When science retires, look what they've done. Yeah, they injected everybody. They didn't die. Any that didn't die when 21,000 died immediately. Polio vaccines.
But here's what I'm getting at. Here's what I'm getting at. There has to be some form of semi-logical nonsense explanation to come from the CDC or FDA suggesting, well, here's why. Here's why we thought remdesivir might be effective. But what we're talking about here, it's absurd to assume. In other words, if it failed at what it was designed to do, what in the world would you turn to it to do this COVID? Again, if COVID's unrelated to Ebola, unless you tell me that there's sequences on the spike protein of Ebola that are the same as the sequences on the coronavirus, which was, I was kind of curious because Dr. Chu in Winnipeg worked on ZMapp and then they kicked her out and sent her back to Wuhan. And I was like, well, wait a second. We got a ZMapp lady here who got kicked out of Winnipeg and sent back to Wuhan. Is there a connection between ZMapp, Ebola, and COVID? I just couldn't understand. Why do you turn to remdesivir?
Because it's not in the spike protein, it's in the SARS-CoV-2 monkey cell line. All those sequences, I sent you the paper just earlier.
I got it.
2011, were they all in the bat cave? Look at the figure from my slide, 2011. No more culture, everything we've talked about, they're all there. All of those sequences.
So you're saying there are sequence similarities between the SARS-CoV-2.
I'm saying the whole Ebola virus is in the viral monkey kidney cell line along with the SARS-CoV-2. There's not just one virus coming from these things. It's not in the spike protein. All of the monkey. Look at the viruses. All of those viruses are in the Vero E6 cell line. That's the cell line they sent to Sierra Leone in 2014 by way of Christian missionaries and a vaccination program when they unleashed Ebola from Fort Detrick that we showed would give you the same cytokine storm in the mid-90s.
I want to ask Dr. Brian, though, what is the narrative story, though? What is the public-facing rationale for why we turned to remdesivir? In other words, I hear the dark side of it from Dr. Judy. I get it. But somewhere, once upon a time, somebody at the CDC or FDA had to face the public and say, hey, we think we might have something here that's effective. We all know it's not. But once upon a time, they had to face the public and say, yeah, we're going to try this failed Ebola treatment. And nobody said, why are you doing that? Why do you think that might be effective? Was there any rationale ever offered?
John, this is the inability to provide any rationale is why I was so upset in May of 2020. The problem I had, which I can't explain why in the hell they would have actually picked a drug that failed against the Ebola virus and then bring it forward for a COVID-19 virus and declare it the only antiviral to be used in all hospitals around America, period. It was the most insane thing ever. So I want to bring this to your point because this is what I continue to show people and audiences from May of 2020 when I brought this up. You have to understand the published article for the Ebola trial, it publishes in December of 2019. The published results are remdesivir sucks. It was ineffective and the most deadly drug in this trial, and it was suspended. The actual published results were Regeneron, a monoclonal antibody. It worked the best and had a 33% mortality rate. But that's not what Anthony Fauci chooses 5 months later in May. He chooses remdesivir. What was crazy to me was the reason he said he chose remdesivir is because a trial for 3 months from January of 2020 till March of 2020 found it also to be safe and effective against COVID-19. Now, this is my problem, John. What rational human being on the planet would see a published article that you funded the study for, you would get the results in December of 2019, see that remdesivir killed 53% of people you gave the drug to, claiming they had Ebola, even if they did have Ebola, and then the very next month, in January of 2020, the very next month, the NIH says, Gilead, maker of the failed remdesivir drug, from the study a month earlier that just got published, we're going to let you pump that same deadly drug that killed 53% of all Africans. We're going to let you inject that into COVID-19 patients from around the world. And we're going to let you, Gilead, the maker of this deadly drug proven in the Ebola trial, we're going to let you do the entire cohort study. We'll give you 53 patients from around the world, pump them full of 10 days of remdesivir, publish your findings. You know what the results were, which is what I highlight everywhere? In those 3 months, 10 days or less of remdesivir, 31% of all people who got that drug in less than 10 days developed multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, had to have their kidneys transplanted, some of them. These were the results, and this is why I came out in May of 2020. I was like, this guy is lying. This drug is proven that it will actually cause death of organs in your body, multiple organs that are fatal. 30% of you will actually have this occur. When we pulled the CMS data in New York to find out how many people who got the 1 5-day treatment, which you're approved for 2 with remdesivir, how many people 65 years and older on Medicare have actually died within first 5 days of treatment? It is exactly 26.9% of all people in the state of New York who got 5 days of remdesivir, 65 years and older, have died. It's exactly the numbers I've been telling people. It's exactly the numbers Gilead published. So why is this even an option? I have no idea other than the fact there was some decision made that remdesivir was going to be the drug of choice. There's nothing else. Regeneron proved to be the most effective. It was published for the Ebola trial of the 4 experimental drugs. Regeneron now is banned from the United States and all U.S. territories, but they're still pushing remdesivir. Now we find out, did you hear this? May 11th, 2022. FDA approved a drug called Olumiant by Eli Lilly. If people now refuse remdesivir, they are now being told in the hospitals, there's a secondary drug we're going to give you, and it's called Olumiant. The generic name is baricitinib by Eli Lilly. Hospital pharmacists are coming up to me around this country telling me at every event I go to, warn the world, they're using a drug called Olumiant in replacement of Remdesivir for Medicare-age patients that has five, John Cullen, five black box warnings of how it can kill you. In the insert with this oral pill, in the insert in the box in the pharmacy, it actually says, even after the COVID-19 approval, in the insert it says, caution, this drug should not be given to anyone who has a serious infection, especially a localized infection, because it can make it more lethal. Are you kidding me? This is the drug you approved for COVID-19 now when people refuse Remdesivir? So then my next question for you is, if there's five ways this drug will kill you, including thrombosis, which is a published side effect of SARS-CoV-2 infection,
why
in the world would you push a drug into the veins of people or orally that's going to cause worsening blood clots of pulmonary embolism, which is proven to do and be fatal, deep vein thrombosis? None of this makes logical sense unless you're trying to mass murder people, which is the weirdest thing ever and most diabolical concept, but there's nothing rational about the choice to use Remdesivir or Olumiant when prophylactically on C19early.com, it shows right now, ivermectin worldwide has the greatest prophylaxis against COVID-19 hospitalization and death by 90% all cases worldwide. Why are we pushing
this drug? What's interesting, so there's, you know, there's this root cause discussion, which is how did they pick this of all things? Why did they choose this as opposed to something else? But then there was what happened in November of 2020. On November 20th of 2020, the World Health Organization comes out and says Dr. Brian Artis is correct. And the WHO recommends against the use of Remdesivir. November 20th of 2020, the World Health Organization publishes a press release, the title of which is The WHO Recommends Against the Use of Remdesivir in COVID-19 Patients. And yet almost 2 years later, it's still approved by the FDA in the United States. But the WHO says don't use it.
You know, it's funny, John Cullen, the Associated Press and the New York Times wrote articles fact-checking my claims that Remdesivir causes acute kidney failure. What was weird was it was the same month the WHO declared that statement that they did not recommend Remdesivir for any hospitalized patient. What's interesting about their published article, they actually quote Gilead Sciences, the maker of Remdesivir, reporting to the European Medical Society or Medicine Society that Remdesivir actually causes acute kidney failure. That's what they said, and I'm being fact-checked for my claims. But that's what Gilead
The WHO backs you up. So according to the World Health Organization, you're spot on correct. But it took them until November 20th of 2020 to come forward with that. You were 6 months ahead of these guys.
Yeah, let me ask a quick question here because there's a connection. Like I say, I call this the Remdesivir ventilator death march. When kidneys fail, that means, you know, your kidneys are not excreting or fluid. Is that what actually goes into your chest and it makes your lungs suffocate? Is that the fluid we're talking about? What happens when your kidneys fail? And does that
Yeah, I'd love
your
to
chest?
Explain that. When you shut down the kidneys and you have a patient, remember your body excretes water through urine and through sweat. But if your kidneys are shut down from acute kidney injury, you can't excrete water. So if you've got the patient laying there, which is what they did with my father-in-law, they shut down his kidneys with a different drug within 24 hours, but then kept pumping an IV bag into his veins. Then his abdomen filled up with water over the next 5 days. His lungs were filling up with water by day two. By day five, his brain had so much water and pressure on it from the accumulated water retention that he went unconscious for 48 hours and had to go on a vent. When we actually put Lasix into his body for 4 hours, which they weren't doing and told me they were for 5 days,
Lasix
4 hours
gets
later,
rid of fluid.
20 pounds of water was lost, and he came off the vent and was breathing on his own and became conscious because his lungs were full of fluid called pulmonary edema. They were misdiagnosing it as pneumonia. This is what Remdesivir does. It causes acute kidney failure. God forbid they have you on IV fluid bags at the same time. It's going to flood your body with water you cannot excrete. The water can't go anywhere but in your abdomen, up into your heart, into your lungs, into your brain, and it complicates everything.
Why don't they just drain the fluid?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
It doesn't go to the bladder.
And I'm not saying that.
Here's another question real quick. And real quick here, I want to make this point real quick because this should sum up for maybe John Collins some of the corruptness behind this thing. When Priscilla Romans was saying the Medicare and Medicaid patients they're having a hard time with, I have been exposing for the last year and a half that Medicare right now on CMS.gov's website, they have a 20% add-on bonus to hospitals if they will just choose remdesivir for the Medicare-aged patients. This is my problem. If remdesivir at the time was the only approved antiviral for hospitals to use, which medical doctors like Simone Gold were losing their license and being punished for using not remdesivir and using hydroxychloroquine, if you're only allowed per the FDA and the NIH's recommendations to use remdesivir, and that's it, as the antiviral, why is Medicare having to bribe hospitals to use the one and only approved drug for hospitalized COVID-19 Americans? What's the intent to bribe the hospital? It's on their website right now, CMS.gov. Why does Chiquita Brooks-Lasore, the admin for CMS.gov, why are they bribing hospitals with a 20% total COVID-19 bill if they'll just use remdesivir and they provide the codes right there on the site? If you'll just choose remdesivir that's known to cause multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension, if you'll just use this one drug for everybody 65 years and older, we promise you a 20% add-on bonus for the whole COVID-19 bill. Why? Why are they having to bribe hospitals to use the one and only drug they were allowed to use anyway? Does that make sense to any of you?
Oh,
Senators
and Dr. Artis,
every Capitol building have asked me, why would Medicare do that? And I look at them and go, you tell me, what would be the intent? They all go like this. To cause harm and death is the only thing I can surmise. No kidding. That's what the logic side of the human brain says. These are either psychopaths who have no concept of love or empathy for human beings, or there's something they don't know that they're not telling us, because everything published points that this is a horrible, toxic, ineffective drug.
That's why I'm back to the eugenics question for Judy. Priscilla, you had a comment?
Yeah, Dr. Artis, the medication you were just talking about, I want to just confirm, is that the one with that has Barrick and it's the first part of the name, like Ralph Barrick?
It's generically baricitinib, B-A-R-I-C-I-T-I-I-B,
yes.
And that's
okay.
What the patient will hear, baricitinib.
Yes, that is correct, and this is what is happening in reality with this. So every patient gets super excited when they're like, oh, I told them no remdesivir. They're not giving to me. I said, okay, what are they giving you next? And it's that's the second medication they always do. And I said, well, let me just inform you about this medication, because everybody feels good about, they didn't give me remdesivir. I'm like, well, they're still giving you this. Like, but it's another layer. And people
is actually more toxic than remdesivir. This new drug from Eli Lilly, proven, published,
well,
to be more deadly than remdesivir.
And I think I told you about that medication because I was super, super worried about it. One, just because I think Ralph Barrick and the first part of that name is Barrick. And I don't know. I'm not excited about any of this.
Yep. And
Greg,
so to help people remember, people.
Okay, who wants to go first? Ahead. All right. Sheila?
On the Ebola issue. In 2014, Dr. Robert Rowan and Dr. Robbins, his partner, was invited into Sierra Leone by the president. They treated 5 cases of Ebola, 2 physicians, a female that was a consort of a physician who died, and 2 exposed AIDS. All 5, once the symptoms deteriorated of Ebola, disappeared after they began the ozone therapy. They had no post-Ebola complications. So when Ebola was claiming 60% of the victims, and not only just the victims, but scarred survivors with the treatments they later brought in, because after those 5 patients, Robert Rowan was escorted out by the military because the therapy is so cheap. And say,
well, let me ask about, you're the only ones who ever talked about this. So I want to guess Brian and Judy and Priscilla, if you've heard of it, or even John. What is ozone therapy? Brian?
Ozone is God's gift of, it's what is created when two atoms of oxygen are split by thunder. It's what makes you feel so good after a rain. Ozone is three atoms of oxygen.
Okay. Well, like I said, you're the only one that I'm curious where this comes from, because in all the chat, we've been at this 15 weeks, you're the only person that's ever mentioned ozone, and that's why I'm curious. But Brian, Judy, John, have you ever heard of this?
I'll let Brian, absolutely, it's detailed in our book, Ending Plague, Frank Schallenberger, ozone, AAOT.us. We had a meeting that Sheila was with last year. Frank Schallenberger chapter in our book, It Cured AIDS. Just saying, yeah, all the things we showed in the second half of Ending Plague is how they knew exactly what they're doing and
so
how they denied us for 40 years the solutions.
Why aren't we talking about this then? I'm curious. Brian?
Exactly.
It's censored. We are talking about it. I never go anywhere where I don't say it. Our book is censored. It's not available anywhere. And doctors are shut down who use it.
Yeah, I'm going to get you all on Lindell TV. That's my new goal.
Judy, we talk about it. Judy, we give patients options to go get these things done. We have to find the people that are doing this. There's lots of places all over America that they can go get it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So is there long-established protocols on this? How do you know how much ozone to give somebody?
Here's how it works. You take medical-grade oxygen. You go to a medical grade ozone generator, maybe $35,000. Yeah, you make it yourself. You can purchase these yourself.
Okay.
Ozone takes your medical grade oxygen, goes through a generator that produces ozone. So in a procedure that they were using in Italy, when I interviewed the Italians in March of 2020, it's called major autohemo. You pull blood out like you're going to donate your blood. They go to an ozone generator to get the ozone into your blood bag, shaken, turns brilliantly bright red because it's highly oxygenated, and you give your own blood back. They were getting negative test swabs in 5 days in Italy. They were reversing inflammation markers in 8 hours.
So why isn't this, on the news every day, or like, how come there's no commercial, saying, have you had your ozone treatment? 45% of people kind of responded. Where's the business?
It cannot be advertised.
Why not?
It's not banned. No, it's not banned, but it cannot be advertised because of 15 U.S.C. 21 of the Federal Trade Commission. The only claims of safety and efficacy have to be FDA approved drugs. That's why.
Okay.
Captain Watts' report on the American Domestic Bioterrorism Program that we briefed on last week.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Greg, I handed that 11-page report to Mike Lindell himself in Dallas this weekend. I don't know that he knows what to do with it, but that is the most concerning of everything we've known.
Okay.
That is most concerning because it is a forensic review of our federal laws that have been altered over decades under the guise of public health emergency of international concern. I was not aware that they altered the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act in 2004, 21 U.S.C. 360 BBB, to where, under emergency use authorization, there are no product safety requirements. The only requirement for efficacy is a, quote, declaration of the secretary that it, quote, may be effective. They removed
the
requirements.
Is that the emergency declaration?
That's correct.
I had that post for a previous show, the actual declaration in the Federal Register. So, Sheila, is that what that comes from?
That's exactly right. All it says is that it may be effective, and that's it.
Yep.
Nothing about safety.
Exactly.
It may be effective is all it says.
And where's this?
There are no labeling requirements. There is no
21 U.S. Code, 360 BBB, our favorite document.
BBB.
Exactly.
21 U.S. Code, 360 BBB, Section 3.
But,
absolutely
but
correct.
The
there's no safety requirements. It says it may be effective. This has been the thing I keep ranting about, is that we now know it's not effective at preventing the disease.
So if it's not effective at preventing the disease, how is the EUA still in existence? It makes no sense. The whole purpose for the EUA is to manufacture these things. And it says it has to prevent. Go ahead.
We've all been scratching our head going, how are they doing this? That is why the American Domestic Bioterrorism Program by Catherine Watt lays it out in the law. So instead of us sitting here going, how can they do this and scratching our head, it is in code. It's something that no one can debate. But our legislators are not aware of it. I would bet money on it. So the biggest thing is making them aware to where they can deny, they cannot deny this is what we are under. How many people do you think would have received these injections if they had known by law there are no required standards for product safety? There's no informed consent. That's how they were lining them up in cars driving by. And anyone associated with it, the manufacturers and contractors, are considered HHS employees for the purpose of sovereign immunity under the Federal Tort Act, Claims Act. So they have laid in the laws to where, Greg, I've got a deck
I'm here.
Of cards.
You did this before, but I'm thinking, like, we need to change this. So give me some. I'm looking at it right now. I got 360. I've got 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB section. What is it?
B3.
But you got to give titles and sections because they don't list them by food, but they don't list them by acts anymore once it becomes law. So the secretary determines that the provision of this investigational drug or investigational device will not interfere with the. Okay, that's all right. That's not quite right. All right, so whatever.
It's
all right, so I know it's here.
She's already done it. She's already done it for you. It's all laid out there.
Where?
Catherine Watt in the American Domestic Bioterrorism Program. You can find
it
at TexasRightToKnow.com.
Does she recommend changes in the law?
Well, yeah, we all want changes in the law.
No, but I'm talking about the actual language. Does she have a place, or can you just summarize in a paragraph the actual change, the old law and the new law? Because we can write a bill on that very simply. See, but if you quote a huge act, we need to focus in. We need to focus in on exactly which section needs correcting, and that's what we need to create a bill around.
Where do we find Catherine Watt's work? You're mentioning her by name, but where do we find her work?
She is on Substack. Let's see. What is her? The easiest way I can get people to is you just go to TexasRightToKnow.com. I can put a great big old link. It's right there on the front page, but I can make it even better to review this work of hers, because in the law, changing that law is going to be, it took decades to get it in there, and it's going to take decades to get it out.
I disagree, because that's the whole point of Action Radio. We've got a vaccine product liability bill that just changes a few sections of the law where it says vaccine manufacturers, shall not be liable. We take up the word not. It's not that tough. We've got the momentum.
Well,
people hate these people now. So I want to know exactly which section, and I'll write it myself. Tell me where you want the change.
Well, it's laid out for you with links directly. The
let's bypass the links.
Is the only way. It's time. The only way we're going to stop this is with laws and courts. Now, Todd Callender is working with Teresa Long, who's the flight surgeon that blew the whistle that pilots who've received the COVID-19 injection should be grounded. He has a whistleblower, and they had a meeting yesterday, which I didn't know it was limited seating. I didn't make it, but I will find out what's happened there, trying to appeal to local law enforcement, because the FAA safety inspector whistleblower is trying to tell the federal FAA of the danger posed to the public of these pilots, which we've been hearing about in the news, passing out.
That's a separate issue from the anti-bioterrorism thing you were talking about. So this is why I got to focus. Okay. We're technically up in a few seconds, but we can run a little bit over. I want to know exactly which section of, and I mean down to the paragraph AB1.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, which one is wrong, and then let me fix it. Okay. Because I don't have time to read huge reports. Okay. Nothing against you, nothing against reports. I mean, I'm sure they're fine, but that's not going to help me right now. So I can't take action on something that big. And the pilots are a whole separate issue. Look, I'm a flight instructor. Trust me, I know the pilot issues.
So Catherine Watt is your point person. I can get you to for y'all to go at that. In the meantime, how do we alert our local law enforcement?
Why do we want local law enforcement?
Because they're the ones that are supposed to be implementing these laws. We've got to alert them of how these laws coming down to them are they are a crime against humanity.
The county sheriffs is the best thing for that. So you're better off with county sheriffs because they're a constitutional officer. Now we're getting too far afield and we're actually pretty much done. So let me just hold you up again. This is why I love having you on the show, but the topics are too big. It's not something we can cover. We need to focus right in. So if you really, you can help incredibly by having the exact specific place in law where the problem is. If you want to talk about law enforcement, that's a whole big topic unto itself. I need to focus in. I need to know which county, which law enforcement officers and which law. Because I can't, issues are too big. The issues are too big for us to focus and function with. That's what I'm saying.
In the fall is when these entities, these associations, your sheriff's associations, your county associations, your municipal league associations are having their conferences.
Okay.
So many of them
are you going
up in September.
Are you
going
to them?
Well, that's what I'm trying to get out.
I'm
trying to get the word out because your audience knows people in law enforcement. There's a good chance they know their commissioners.
We need some prep on this. We need to talk about why it's important to get law enforcement, which laws we're talking about, why it affects the Constitution, how they can have discretion to not enforce them. We need to do this another week. it's too big a topic too late in the show. Yeah, so let me hold you up on that right now. Let me get to a couple of closing statements and contact information from Judy, John, you, Sheila, and Brian. Let's go in order there, and let's pick it up again next week. And we have much to do. Judy, thanks for being on the show this week.
Thanks, Greg. You know where to find me, therealdrjudy.com, plaguethebook.com. Everything that's been said today is on the website. I sent all the references on the papers, but I gave the talk at Reckoning Fest. I keep trying to show you the answers that try to break it down. I'm doing the best I can.
I want to get you on with Emerald Robinson and anybody else we can at Lindell TV. I want to see if we can get you some more. Say that again?
Right. Brian's contribution, Dr. Artist, today. We will be there. We've been fighting this lawsuit in Northern California. We will be there next week on the 7th. So we're doing everything we can.
Wait a minute. So that's Fresno. Is that next Thursday?
Yeah, I'll check.
No,
when?
Okay.
Next Wednesday.
All right. Next Wednesday. Okay, yeah. Oh, so if you're Wednesday. Okay, so can you report on it Thursday? I mean, give us a call from Fresno if you're still there.
Sure.
We'll talk about it later. We'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, I'll be on. I'll almost certainly be driving home.
Good time to chat. Hopefully the car is quiet. I know it's going to be hot out there. Okay, so let's get to John. Any contact information you want to give? Any closing statement? This has been an incredible show. I've been taking notes, and I'll be talking to. I'm going to pass some of the specific points in the show onto Emerald's producer, and I can see if anybody that wants to get an intro, let me know. Judy, would you be interested in being on Lindell TV?
Sure. I've been on it before with Brandon.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, yeah, he's one of the actually, his son was our producer when I was on. It was kind of interesting. All right. Well, connected then. Well, I should have known. Judy's already connected. Why am I bothering? I'm sorry. John?
Judy knows everybody. She's a big shot.
Why do I think that she doesn't?
She knows everybody. Yeah. All right. So you can find my work either on YouTube at the John E. Hoover channel, or you can find my more daily content on Twitter. And my handle on Twitter is @I_M_JohnCullen. But I use a hashtag on almost all of my content. The hashtag is IAmTheMapsDaddy. I am the Maps Daddy. And
you the daddy.
If you
the daddy.
That's right. That's right. So if you click on that hashtag, you'll see thousands of posts of mine that are somewhat geographically oriented, you know, comparing things like Rhode Island to Nigeria. I like to make unfair comparisons like that. So so either on YouTube or on Twitter. And every Friday I do a show with Jason Goodman called Crowdsource the Truth. And you can find that on YouTube as well.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Hey, nice chat with Emerald. That was pretty informative. And I think she...
Yeah, it was great.
I think we have more. She has more questions. Like I said, I want to get her back next time because that was a lot for her to think about. So she actually, it seemed to me that it was such a great amount of information that hopefully she'll listen to the podcast and then come back sometime soon with some follow-up stuff. Because I think when that much material is that new to you, we know all this stuff, you know, because we talk about it all the time. But as well-informed as she is, you know, there was a lot of new information for her. And that's what we do here.
So hopefully she... spinning stuff. It's head-spinning stuff. I mean, you hear this for the first time. You're like, what? You know, it's hard to comprehend all this and that it all happened at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to handle in one dose. You're right.
Yeah, I'm going to get her connected with Priscilla Romans and see if they can advocate for her grandmother. See what we can do there. Sheila, how do we find you?
Sheila Hemphill at TexasFrightToKnow.com. My email is info, at TexasFrightToKnow.com. I am available to do Zoom meetings. I do ask that the organizers of the Zoom meetings that want to have one try to get a minimum of 10 people. Not that one doesn't count, but it's just able to replicate your multiply your time and the communication that takes place. So on my website, you will find the link to the American Domestic Bioterrorism Program, bold in red. You click there, and I would draw your attention to page 9 and 10 to find out where we really are. There is benefit to know when you're in a trap. Right now, if you don't know it, you don't know you need to be trying to figure out how to get out of it. I will tell you we are trapped by law. So thank you, Greg, for these programs, and I look forward to educating people how to get more involved and what direction we need to take to stop this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the simple form is we just pass new laws, and we just have to write them and get them out there, and that's what we do here. So thank you, Sheila. Appreciate your efforts. Brian, you have a lot of good information. You got to participate more, dude. Yeah, you got some good stuff going on out there. Yeah,
I'm also good at listening. That's what radio's for.
You're too good at listening. You're better than I am.
I learned a lot from that. Okay, in fact, I'm going to do a whole show with Judy Mikovits just on codons because I loved her comments earlier. I was like, her and I need to talk about that. Okay. Anyway, you can find me at thedrartistshow.com and everywhere that anybody's censored on the entire planet. That's where you want to go looking, and you'll probably find interest in me on there.
Yeah,
but thedrartistshow.com is where you'll find most of my interviews.
Okay, so quick question: did you get any legislative progress out of the conference you did, the James conference?
Not yet, but we're working on it.
Okay, yeah, I know how that feels. There's a lot of stuff to do. Yeah, it's
sure you do.
My goal, hopefully soon, is to hopefully get if I can impose myself and get some invites to some of these conferences too, where I can actually teach citizen legislative workshops, where I can actually show people how to do this, you know, and get them out with their laptops and start, you know, cranking out some stuff and sharing bills, you know, right from these conventions. I think would be a huge step forward. So I'm open.
I had to let Clay Clark know I won't be at the several next reawakening tours just because of weddings and other things. So maybe he can plug you in and let you get up there and just speak to the world.
I can do that. I can do that from here.
All right. I'll introduce you.
Thank you. You're great.
Introduce.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
All right. And he actually talks with the Trump kids every day.
So oh, he does.
Maybe he can help you.
Well, let's get him on the show first of all. Let's get him on the show, and then we can talk bills. Yeah. And then he can talk to Trump. And, of course, and then he can invite Trump on the show, which has been my goal all along anyway. I want Trump's endorsement for Action Radio. Ooh. What do you think? He said with a grin.
I love it. Bring it on. Yeah, have a great week.
Thanks, Brian.
Great, bye.
And this is our 15th week, folks. It's we keep going from what I thought was going to be one or two episodes, just keeps going and going and going. And so the information is just amazing. I made several notes that I'll be sending to Emerald Robinson's producer for possible shows for them. And anybody else that's interested, I'll put them in the show notes. What happened today was what I was hoping would happen as we got to know each other better. You guys all start talking to each other. And so rather than, if you'll notice where we started, it was more like a presentation everybody was making. And now you guys are actually exchanging information and drugs and data and all kinds of good things like that. That's where I was hoping we would go. And as more people join us from more different areas, we're going to have that opportunity on and on. We're going to bring in journalists. We're going to bring in all kinds of different media people, legislators, you know, Donald Trump. They're all going to be a part of this at some point so that we can share, you know, all our different levels of expertise. So thank you all very much. We will do it again, Penglis, for blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws. If you want to contribute here, we've got paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. But I'd much rather create an ad like the one I made for Priscilla Romans in Grace Care. And so just to email me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. And we will do this again next week at 10 a.m. Central Time with the world's greatest doctors and everybody else.